Tonight, Todd Belcourt discusses an organization you should know. Then Elliot Serrano rides sidecar as leader Lou Lang stays up pretty late. And later, In Fine Spirits brings the drinks as Rob Martier gets us ready for the weekend. All that and a new game of What's in the Box right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Hello. Happy Friday. This is exciting. It's been a really exciting week. And thank you for tuning in pretty late. I am your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It's pretty busy tonight. It's getting warmer. I think everyone's feeling like, you know, maybe a little bit of cabin fever for the last few weeks. They want to go out and have a good time. So it's a lovely night to be out. I know it's going to be warm over the weekend. Rob, you know, some of our shows are going to Iowa.
I know.
Are you jealous?
A bit. Yeah, actually,
yeah,
I am. I will admit. Yeah, I would love to be there. A lot of energy up there, especially on Monday. It's going to be a lot of fun. Steve Cochran and Rokan.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous. You know, I go to Springfield like nothing. Everyone's like, "What are you doing there?" I'm like, "I'm just going to bear witness. I'm just going to listen to what the governor has to say."
Because things are so tumultuous, and we know why. Mm-hmm. I think Iowa this year is going to be so much fun because even more media is there than usual.
Oh, sure.
To cover this event, to cover the caucuses, to cover the votes. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, today, two of the big items in the news as far as the primaries go is are that Donald Trump's numbers suffered as a result of yesterday's debate, as well as did Ted Cruz's numbers go down a little bit, took mm-hmm. a little bit of a beating. Mm-hmm. And then there are the investigators who are probing into Hillary Clinton's emails determined that there were many that were top secret. Is that right?
Yeah, there are a string of about, depending on which reports you read, 7 or 8 strings of emails that were at the highest level of top secret that were not only exchanged with Hillary Clinton and others, but also possibly between the White House as well. So there's some juxtapositioning going on here, a little Potomac two-step, if you will. This is the trickle now that I think Hillary Clinton's camp feared. It just continues to...
Do you think there's enough of heat on her right now to have any effect on Monday's result or Iowa results next week?
Well, here's the funny thing. You know, we've been watching these polls, you know, all through this process, and she is not believable. People don't trust her. Even her supporters don't trust her.
I think there. I think there are followers and supporters of Hillary's who do.
Oh, sure.
My mom is one of them.
Well, absolutely. No. They're
just
out
in
there.
Generality.
The,
right.
The funny thing is, though, is that she continues by the narrowest of margins. She continues to lead in the polls. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, despite New Hampshire, if you look down south where a lot of people are expecting her to really make a big splash, mm-hmm. in Iowa, she's still leading Bernie Sanders. You know, despite all of this stuff that people are hearing about her emails, you know, people say, well, it's not that big of a deal for me. I will vote for her.
It is interesting how big the field is for Republicans trying to find somebody who's going to be the candidate. And there are two. I know there's a third. O'Malley? Correct? Is the
yes.
Other gentleman's
Yeah, Martin
name.
O'Malley.
Who I have not heard, you know, anything about. And nary a thing, I would say. Cause, mm-hmm. Can you mark that? We said nary tonight. I don't think we've said that in a long time. I guess people stayed out of this race because she seemed like such a dominant figure. And, you know, Bernie has gotten a lot of attention because he says things that, you know, are new and different. And young people are drawn to his, you know, a lot of his
sure.
you know, plans.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, no, he's right now in terms of that demographic, the young folks, he is a populist, that's for sure. They like what he's saying.
You know, producer Cody Goff, Brian Noonan's producer, wrote an article that's been featured in Huffington Post today about Bernie Sanders.
Uh-huh.
It's gone viral.
Interesting.
Yeah, it says that I'm voting for Bernie Sanders and I'm not unrealistic.
Okay, unrealistic in the sense that he might win or
unrealistic in the promises Bernie's making compared to what could actually be implemented.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's educated and not unrealistic.
All right.
Is that double negative? Now I don't know what he is.
Is that in the is it the headline? Of
yeah,
the
something like that.
Piece?
I can tell you what it is, but look that up. Bernie right. Sanders, Cody Gaw.
All right, not unrealistic.
Not unrealistic.
Well, he's like, no, I really, seriously, I'm not unrealistic.
I'm not.
We're like, we don't even know who you are, everybody
yeah.
else. And we know, you and I
We
know.
Do, we know. Well, but right. he's got a story that's up. I figured I'd mention it.
Now, a lot of people know.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to turn to Illinois politics in just a moment. I don't know if you heard the interview with Daniel Biss on Justin Kaufman's show, which was excellent. And you know what I realized as Justin was interviewing him? I don't designate the political party I usually allow my guests to do so if they want to. My take on that, just for the reason I don't generally say one or the other, is I consider them to be representatives and senators and the governor of all of us. We have the discussion as far as disagreements between Democrats and Republicans, but when I'm talking to them, I like to think that they are reflecting, you know, what the, you know, yes, partly their values, but also what their job is to their constituents. So I don't know. Should I say, like, every time we have a guest on? I mean, I joke about not having as many Republicans. Only now we are moving in the other direction of getting, they're staying up past 10. They're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, we're now flush with Republicans.
Wait, Katowski's on there every week? Hold on a second.
What are we? We got to get our time.
Hold on a second. So they
are fair time rules.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So we are working on that, and they are actually approaching us about coming on the show. And we appreciate Representative Harris and Representative Cabello, who've been on this week. Coming up after 11:30, we will talk to Leader Lou Lang. But right after this break, we're going to talk to Todd Bellacore, who is an adjunct professor at Northwestern Law. And he's also a co-founder of the Chicago International Social Change Film Festival. So we want to talk to him about the work that he does both here and the advocacy work he does in Springfield. More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. Oh, wait. Could you hear me say all of that? Yeah, that's good. Just not Todd. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host. And Todd Bellacore was asking me if people can hear us. We have could you hear me say that we have the number one nighttime talk show from 11 to 2 a.m.? I don't usually say that out loud on my own show.
Sounds good when you say it.
It doesn't. It feels good, too, but I don't usually say it in the microphone. I was saying it away from the microphone, letting Todd know that, yes, we are live streaming. So if you have any friends right now and you're like, hey, listen to Patty and Todd talk about what's going on in our state and in the city of Chicago, you can go to WGNRadio.com. Todd is a professor. Now, adjunct. Can I just say professor? Do I have to say adjunct?
They pay me like an adjunct, so call me that, please.
Oh, all right, then. When they pay you right, then you can be a professor at Northwestern Law. And he is also the co-founder of the Chicago International Social Change Film Festival. And let me give you a little bit of background. I've been going to Springfield since last April when the governor made cuts on World Autism Day to autism programs, epilepsy programs, after-school programs. And I want to know what was going on. And one of the most generous people that I met in the Capitol was Todd. He saw me approaching a representative who I was going to try to see if, you know, maybe I could talk to her about maybe, you know, hearing out my story. And he goes, you don't want to talk to her. You were very well, because you wanted me to build up. I was just learning how to approach representatives with what we are passionate about, what we want to advocate for. Tell us a little bit about what you advocate for in Springfield.
Well, what I advocate for is criminal justice reform. But one of the things I noticed when I went to Springfield, primarily beyond the budget deficit and, you know, the fiscal issues we're dealing with, there's also multiple other deficits that weren't really touched on by the governor's State of the State address. And that's the deficits of things like compassion, deficits of things like collegiality,
yeah,
deficits of things like ideas. And the idea was to create a mechanism, to a vehicle of sorts, for people who may not understand the injustices that other people are enduring day to day, and such that they could see that struggle through that person's eyes and walk in that person's shoes and want to do something about it and, you know, feel that struggle differently than they may learn about it in the context of a hearing or some sort of anecdotal data you may provide. So that's what bore the idea of film. Film is the best medium to really communicate that sort of in the actual feet and shoes struggle grind. That
personal stories.
That's right.
Okay.
So we created the Chicago International Social Change Film Festival, a friend of mine, Emil Cambry.
Okay, and so when you go down there, are you sharing these some of these films with them, whether by sharing links to them, or do you invite them to that? Have you had the opportunity to invite them to some of the film festival in order for them to participate and understand better? Because the representatives are the people who, you know, are making decisions. I know that you work closely with trying to get some changes made in the state of Illinois. Have they responded to the films?
Well, that's the beauty of it. Technology does afford us the opportunity to provide information to lawmakers via email. But as you know, email is not the most really productive way to interact with them. You really have to catch them in the hallways.
Yeah.
So the
and
benefit
you're very
has,
good at it, too. Plus, does it help? Does it help that you're a little tall?
No, because they actually see me and walk the other way before I even see them.
So. Oh, because they can see you coming?
That's right. They see me coming.
You know, they run the other way when I come, too. I think they can hear my shoes coming.
Yeah, they know I'm going to ask them to take a tough vote. So at the end of the day, the films and my client experience and my immersion in the community in general, working with individuals with criminal records, affords me the unique opportunity to share with them those stories in a vivid detail.
Right.
When I was young, I used to write in English class, and my English teacher would say, "Don't tell me, show me." And I was like, "I don't know what the heck that means." But as I learned over time, there's ways you can express stories or events in a way that someone feels like they're living it.
Okay.
So it's vivid, such that that image, that story, that family stays with the individual. And that's what you need to compel someone to really change their heart and mind on something that's so easy to vote against, like criminal justice reform and people with records who are looking for opportunity.
Well, you had been working on something last year, and I think it was in regards to judges and sentencing, and I know that it was a very close vote. How, when it comes to a close vote like that, how, you know, what is it like to try to convince somebody that you know it's going to be an uphill battle? What kind of techniques do you use? Because I've been trying to talk to our listeners about meeting with their representatives. These are men and women who really, for the most part, are, I mean, as far as I can tell, really do want to do the right thing. So when you have a tough vote like that, you know, how urgent is it to sort of not push them too hard, but convey the importance of their vote?
That's a really great question. I mean, it's a really delicate balance. I mean, certainly you don't want to say anything that's so bombastic that it makes someone not want to deal with you or
yes.
work with you going forward. But at the same time, you want to deal with the seriousness of the matter.
I mean, right.
when you have people who are quadriplegic who are coming to the Capitol to try to advocate for the funding they need to stay alive, or vulnerable populations to have their programs continue, you pray that we don't have to live in a government or society where that's required.
Right.
And despite the fact that that happens, we still have these injustices and these funding issues. So if you've got a population that everyone generally sees as worthy of deserving of assistance, of people who are
vulnerable and right, special needs.
Uh-huh. When you have people with criminal records, people are like, "Oh, well, you made your bed, you should lie in it." So it makes it much harder sell. So when you have issues with individuals or legislators who aren't willing to vote in a particular way, that's when you do have the client contact. You ask for people who live in that district, who go to that person's church. You expand your network to try to find someone who can actually be a constituent or talk to the individual in a language or some sort of heart-to-heart that they'll understand. I'm a father. I have children. I'm not talking about myself in this
particular No, but example. The individuals that share their personal stories.
That's right. And I can't tell you what it's like to have a birthday come around and I can't get my son a gift because I have a criminal record from 10 years ago. And I can't tell you the indignity I feel when I get told by employer no, 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 no matter what I do in terms of my educational accomplishments and all the things I've done since. So when does people's past wrongs, you know, stop allowing them to, can, you know, when can that actually be left in the past and allow people to live their future?
Well, you know, that was something that the governor said is a goal, is to, when it comes to whether it's the prison system, our current inmates, but also once they are released from prison, you know, what does that look like afterwards? How did that part of the speech strike you? Did that seem like a genuine, obligation, a commitment to doing better going forward?
You know, the governor is an interesting gentleman. I mean, that sounded more loaded than I intended for it to sound.
No, I think that's accurate.
One of the things he said in his state of speech, which really stood out to me, is the most significant transformations underway in their administration were attributed to criminal justice realm.
Right. It was just education and criminal justice were the two top things he seemed to draw attention to.
Yes. And personally, he signed three of the bills that I worked on last session. And that made me an outlier amongst my advocate friends and groups because of the relationship we were able to build with him and his administration and his staff as it relates to actually following through on the promise to decrease our prison population by 25% by 2025. So he has a commission that's created 14 recommendations. Of the recommendations I've read over, and I've tried to do whatever I can to weigh in on them, and they're very surface level. I mean, they're very data driven, and which is important to coordinate need according to coordinate care according to need. But it doesn't even talk about things that are really at the threshold of this criminal justice issue, things like race, things like mandatory minimums, things about, you know, unconscious bias and things that we're dealing with the police officers in Chicago and some of the reasons that violence persists and some of the reasons that no matter what you do in terms of changing laws, the enforcement of law will continue to be disproportionate unless we actually address some of those underpinning issues.
Well, I know that you also said that you deal with poverty issues as well. I mean, that seems to be at the core, because in the city, and we've talked about this a lot on my show, the systematic, racial divide that we have, where an entire community has been basically choked you know, when it comes to access to education and economic resources, you know, what kind of response do you get? Because it seems like the city, and I would imagine this is true in other parts of the state, where it's kind of like, let them take care of themselves. You know, it's easier to turn our backs on those neighborhoods. And I think that the video that came out with Laquan McDonald, because it was on the national level, because then it happened again, and it, even after that, it continues to be something where, like, how can this possibly, how could they have done this again? You know, there's a 911 call, and there's a shooting with a 19-year-old who, you know, was distraught, was possibly mentally ill. He's killed, and the woman who lives in the building. You know, these are stories that continue to pervade our news. And do you see a way forward with working with, you know, the entire state? Because we do need their support when it comes to these issues.
Yeah, anytime you see an injustice that's so, that yields such a visceral reaction that's so shocking to the soul that it makes people even have no understanding what it's like to live on the south or west side of Chicago, say, this is enough.
Right.
We need to all stand up and do something about it. That really creates a unique opportunity to get people on board or build bridges with individuals who may not normally be involved in these movements. So that's the moment where all the individuals who are tasked with building these bridges and coalitions and community leverage that. You know, there's a lot of great ideas available, but we need everyone at the table. And what you mentioned in terms of poverty in communities, just like there's food deserts, there's opportunity deserts.
Yeah.
And until we do something about the systematic deprivation of opportunity in communities, particularly communities of color, these are issues that are continuing to happen. We can do a lot of things to change how the law enforcement interacts with the community, and that's important, and that should be done. And I'm working with the folks on the mayor's task force to try to make sure those recommendations are sound. But at the end of the day, unless we have an economic development plan that's targeted towards the communities that need it most, we're really not going to do much about the blight that actually curses our city.
And I think has a significant impact on the entire city and then on the entire state. We are hanging out with Todd Belcour, who is an adjunct professor at Northwestern Law. He's also the co-founder of the Chicago International Social Change Film Festival. Before we go to the news, how can people find some of your work, some of these films online?
Absolutely. We have something called, our acronym is CISCFF, and we have something called CISF Cinema. So our acronym, cinema.com. But certainly ChicagoSocialChange.org is our website. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. It's CISCFF. I know it's a mouthful.
I know you heard me earlier trying to introduce you. And also, you know, start Googling it. Google Chicago International Social Change Film Festival to see some of their very important work. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I've been in Springfield this week to see what the governor had to say during his State of the State address. Joining me on the line is Leader Lou Lang. How you doing, Lou?
I'm great. Hi, Patty.
Wonderful to hear you tonight. And also, I want to let you know, joining me in studio is Todd Belcour, who I think you're familiar with.
I am. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Leader?
he's a little bit nervous. I feel bad because he's a little nervous. And you have to come join us in studio when it's convenient for you, sir.
I will do that.
Excellent. So let's just, first of all, what were your impressions of the State of the State address? What was going through a Leader Lou's mind at the time?
Well, as I commented that day, I think the governor tried his best to be less combative, maybe a little more conciliatory, but in the end, it was just different words saying the same thing. We still don't have a budget, and we still have the same reason, which is we have a governor who doesn't want to do the budget until we check off a list of political agenda items that he has. In the meantime, while he's doing that, kids in need aren't getting services. College kids who have MAP grants coming to them aren't getting those grants, and they're dropping out of school because they can't pay for it. Universities are in real trouble. One or two of them may actually close. Mental health services, senior services aren't being delivered. In short, a big mess. And there, in that 35 minutes, he said really not one word about the actual budget, which is the number one thing we must accomplish every year in the state of Illinois. So he left us with the same mess he started with.
Now, you mentioned the MAP grants. I know that was something that you were working on in the House yesterday. Did that pass and is now going to the governor?
It is on the governor's desk, but I fully expect him to veto it. The Republicans in the House, and I assume in the Senate as well, commented that they didn't like the bill. And they said, well, we're for MAP grants. We're just not for these MAP grants. And my position is that we have a responsibility we have a state where we have a leader who has told us that he wants to create jobs, he wants to lift people out of poverty, he wants to improve education, and yet kids are dropping out of school left and right because of the governor's stubbornness on these issues, and something's got to give soon, or there's going to be even more pain to the state of Illinois.
Well, if he says that he's ready to, you know, in good, you know, I guess in with respect to each other, he said that we have to work with respect to each other. It seems like passing this legislation for the MAP grants to be restored would be, you know, a move in the right direction. I don't understand. What was it that the other side of the aisle found distasteful about this particular bill?
What they're really saying is we don't have enough money to pay for it at the moment.
Okay.
Because we don't have a budget. But I think if we can't put a whole budget together, we better piece a budget together piece by piece of the items that we know we must do. Everyone in the General Assembly knows we have to take care of the MAP grants. We can't let hundreds and thousands of our kids drop out of school. There are second semester seniors who will not graduate because we don't have MAP grants for them. That's almost criminal.
Well, when I spoke to a representative last year, right at the beginning of my visits to Springfield back in April, he told me that everyone's going to have to make sacrifices. And as far as I can tell so far, the groups that have sacrificed the most have been the most vulnerable. And now we're going to students who will now not be able to graduate. When is it everybody? I mean, what would it take for people to go, hey, wait a minute, everybody needs to start cooperating? We're not getting our notices to renew our license plate stickers. That's about the only thing that seems to be across the board. And even then, that's not bothering anybody.
Well, you know, there's a whole bunch of people in Illinois who do very well every day, who don't need state services directly. Maybe their kids go to public schools, but the public school budget was signed by the governor. And so a lot of people don't care. And the people who do care and the people that are really being hurt don't have lobbyists representing them. They don't have people running around Springfield banging the drums. There's a whole bunch of members in the Illinois General Assembly that want to do a budget, but you can't negotiate a budget when the leader of your state is unwilling to negotiate one. And so we hear from a lot of people who say, you got to do this, you got to do this. I remind them that we did pass a budget. We passed a budget in May. The governor chose to veto that budget. He could have amendatorily vetoed it. In other words, if he thought we spent too much money, he could have taken out a red pen and made that budget anything he wanted it to be. But instead, he chose to veto the entire budget except for the elementary education portion. Interesting, the governor, when asked a couple of weeks ago what he thought his most important accomplishment in his first year in office might be, he said it was the education budget, which is great because the only votes he got in the education budget were Democratic votes. He told the Republicans to vote no, and they did. So in the Illinois House, there were no Republican votes for the budget piece that the governor signed that he said was his most important accomplishment in office. So that says a lot about his stewardship of the state.
Why would that be his goal? Is to have for show that the Republicans voted against something that he ultimately sought to show that he is bipartisan, can work with both sides of the aisle? Look, I did something with the Democrats.
No, that wasn't it at all. It's just that it didn't want school to start in September and have hundreds of schools shut down for lack of funding, and he didn't want to wear the jacket for that. And so for political reasons, he had the other side of the aisle vote against the budget. Democrats voted for the education budget, and he signed it. And now he's called that his most significant accomplishment. And if you think about that for a second, you want to scratch your head a little bit.
What is the, you know, what are the prospects? Because you told us last week, and I'm guessing they haven't improved since the State of the State address. You would not be surprised, I believe, if we did not get a budget during the entire term that Governor Rauner is in office.
Certainly, that would be unfortunate, but it is possible. As I think you know, over 90% of our budget is being paid out by court order. So take the Department of Children and Family Services, for instance, the agency that takes care of wards of the state. There's a court order requiring we pay that money. And so up and down the line, there are court orders, but there's so many things that those court orders don't cover. It doesn't cover higher education or the MAP grants. It doesn't cover autism, epilepsy, mental health, adult daycare, drug addiction. There's a whole swath of things it doesn't cover. But, of course, those folks don't have the lobbyists in Springfield. Those folks don't have any political sway, particularly with the governor of the state of Illinois. He proved that again today when the administration decided to reject all of the new conditions proposed by the advisory board to add to the medical marijuana program. He rejected PTSD, rejected all sorts of newly proposed medical conditions so that the sickest of the sick in Illinois can get a little help from the state. And I thought that was a callous approach.
Were those proposed, the expansion of medical conditions, was that something that was presented by the General Assembly, or is that something that came across his desk in a different manner?
The law we passed a couple of years ago put 39 conditions into the law, but then we created an advisory board, and that advisory board meets twice a year. They hear testimony from people who have certain other medical conditions that they wanted to add, and the law provides that the advisory board hears the testimony, makes recommendations to the state, and the state would determine whether those are approved. So the advisory board has now met twice in the last year. Many conditions, I think 11 or 12 in total, some of them overlapped between the two hearings, were proposed. All of them have been rejected, even though there was not a shred of evidence or testimony against the addition of these new conditions. They were rejected by the state. And when they were rejected, they were rejected with the statement that it's too early to add these. And so I would pose the question, if it's too early to add them, why did they let the advisory board meet in the first place? Why did they waste their time and wait 180 days to then reject them so that our veterans, for instance, who come back from war protecting us and have come back with PTSD, who desperately need this product, can't have it?
Hey, Leader Lou, I got a question from one of our callers, Rich, who didn't want to stay on the phone, and then he got kind of angry and upset. He says he's curious if WGN just wants to talk with liberal people. He's accusing us of being one-sided.
Representative David Harris,
not.
Who retired as a major general and is a Mount Prospect, was on last night.
Yeah,
we had
night.
John Cabello on, who originally from Texas and has served for 20 years in the police department and is on leave from the Rockford Police Department, serving as a Republican in the House of Representatives. So
we are not.
We've
we
also had Senator
sides.
Michael Connelly on the show.
And Rich, even though you weren't totally happy when you were talking to me, your question is still going to get on the air. So here you go. Who has been running the state for the last 30 years? This comes from Rich. And what were the shortfalls in the previous budget that you think might have caused some of the issues? Rich seems to think there was some.
Well, you know, until Rod Blagojevich became governor, we had 30 years in a row of Republican governors. And then we had Blagojevich and Quinn, and now we have Governor Rauner. Plenty of blame to go around, plenty of issues to talk about. But, you know, it's not really constructive to talk about what we should have done 20 years ago, what we should have done 30 years ago, what we should have done 5 years ago. What is constructive is to put our energy into figuring out why we don't have a budget today, who's responsible for that, and then get the people necessary to get the budget moving forward. But what we will not do is just simply succumb to the governor holding his breath till he turns blue. We will not succumb to political blackmail, and we will not throw the people of the state of Illinois under the bus simply because the governor has a political agenda.
So I hope that answers Rich's question. And also, Rich, you're always welcome to come on the air, and I'm more than happy to talk about who I have on the show. Leader Lou, you were hesitant to come on. I'll be honest. I had to convince him, Todd, because I consider you to be somebody who is important in the House of Representatives. I've talked to many of your colleagues on both sides of the aisle and in the Senate. So I don't you know, I'm having the conversation, and I consider you to be somebody who's well-informed and has a point of view. So I appreciate your time, Leader Lou. Did Rich just call back again?
He did. I actually asked the question verbatim the way he said it, but he called back to tell me that it wasn't, I didn't ask it correctly.
Oh.
He wanted to make sure.
He wanted to sound angry.
Yeah. Well, and Rich, you also were offered the chance to go on air, my friend.
Yeah.
You could ask the question yourself.
312.
That's how this works at times.
312-981-7200. Yeah. Bring it, Rich.
Right. Rich said right that his actual question was that the Democrats were in charge of the state for the last 30 or so years. He means, I guess, the legislator downstate. And the budgets that they passed were problems that even if Republican governors and whatnot were involved in. It was the Democrats' fault for all the shortfalls that he thinks existed in the previous
budget. And I believe Leader Liu answered that question. He said that we don't have time right now to go over what happened 20 years ago, 30 right. years ago. We're dealing with what the right now and people struggling and, you know, people dying, as a matter of fact.
And I would just like to point out one more time, your opinion got on the air.
So there you go. And in a you know, even though we're laughing at it because you didn't have the balls to say it yourself. So I'm just saying, you want it word for word, come on the air and say it to our ears. We're right here.
I feel like Rich is going to call back.
We haven't seen the last of Rich.
Leader Liu, he hasn't been in this situation. Todd and I have hung out several times in the Capitol, and they think he's seeing a different side, and yet the same side, wouldn't you say, Todd?
I didn't think it would translate to the air so crisply.
Yeah, you didn't think I was going to be able to do that? Yeah. And you know what? After 10 p.m., I've had it sometimes. Well, Leader Liu, you get that a lot. You get a lot of Michael Madigan controls the state. It's his fault that we're in this position, that he's accumulated this kind of power. He scares people. He intimidates them to vote. And you mentioned last week, not every Democrat votes lockstep with what Michael Madigan introduces to the House or other as well as your other colleagues.
Well, that's absolutely true. So I think it's fair to say that for the most part, most of the Republicans in the House think alike. There are some variants, but for the most part, they think alike. And certainly all summer, fall, and winter, they've been voting alike. Democrats are a little harder to herd. They're a little harder to get in a circle. And for the Republicans who always say, well, you guys always follow Mike Madigan, but then they say in the next sentence, well, if you guys want to do it, why don't you do it on your own? Pick a side. You know, you can't have both of those things going on at the same time. You can't demand that we do it all ourselves and then be upset that Mike Madigan leads us in a direction. Democrats in the House, Democrats in the Senate under President Cullerton have very strong opinions about issues. We argue with our leaders on a regular basis. And for all of the complaints about Speaker Madigan, most of them are spurious and a waste of energy because he's a fantastic leader. I think a lot of people think that when you've been in power in a leadership position as long as he has, that means automatically that there's something wrong with you. We elect him our leader. We're proud of him as our leader. So I hate to see where we'd be today without a strong leader with Governor Rauner acting the way he is in Springfield.
Rob, did you have a question? I wasn't sure if you were going for your button.
Well, I'm just... I listen to this Representative Lang, and I asked this question yesterday of a guest that Patty had on, and I talked about ground zero. And I hear from both sides how we need to stop, you know, talking over each other and past each other and start talking with each other. Where is ground zero? Because what I get from the Democratic side of the aisle are these values that can't be compromised, and we can't succumb to this evil Republican governor that we have currently in the state. And then the same on the Republican side. Well, you know, we need to go ahead and get this pro-agenda, you know, pro-business agenda put forth in order for us to be healthier economically and for everybody to grow as a state. Where's ground zero here for you? Because, you know, I listen in the tenor. I got to tell you, Representative Lang, the tenor coming from you tonight is awfully combative. And I think that's what's really annoying people these days.
Actually, I'm not being combative at all. I'm just simply trying to be honest.
Well, look, you just said that you like to argue with Democrats in the House. So you're telling me that if I go through the last 12 years of Republican votes in the Senate and the House, they will have voted 100% with what their leadership tells them to do? They have no debate? They don't have forums? They don't go back and forth with each other?
I didn't say over the last 12 years.
Well,
that's where we are right now. In the overtime session, there's virtually 47 votes against everything we propose. MAP grants yesterday, all opposed. The education budget, all opposed. Fixing child care that the governor wanted to cut, all opposed. Not one single Republican has voted with the Democratic side on any single issue or since the overtime session has begun. So... this is important to say. We passed a budget. The governor had all opportunities he needed to fix that budget any way he wanted to. That's what the Constitution gives the governor as a power. It's an important power. It's a power that can be abused. The governor chose not even to use that power, but to put us into this turmoil. Our responsibility is to get a budget done. That is our single most important responsibility. It's more important than the governor's turnaround agenda, and there will be those that argue that some of the items on the governor's turnaround agenda are critical to the improvement of the state of Illinois. I don't necessarily agree, but I would tell you this, even if I did agree, I wouldn't put that turnaround agenda ahead of the budget. The budget must be done.
And there you go. Leader Lou, we appreciate your time, and I'm going to see you in a couple weeks. I'm coming down for the budget address on February 17th. Is that the correct date?
Yes, I think it is. I don't have my calendar in front of me, but I think that is the right
I need
thing.
You to know these things by heart. I'm just teasing you. I wish you a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you again before the budget address and see how things
Thanks,
are going.
Patty. Everybody have a great night.
You too. Thank you so much,
Thanks.
Sir. More after this on 720 WGN. Pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm joined by our guest, Todd Belcour, who's been hanging out with us since the beginning of the show. We also have Jaron from In Fine Spirits, who's brought us some fine spirits. We also have comedian Dwayne Kennedy, whose new CD is coming out February 2nd.
Yes.
No. Yes.
Yeah.
Man, why do you sound so hesitant?
Because I had an issue with the sound engineer.
What did he do? He said, oh, shoot, is what he said.
Yeah. But no, I actually talked to him on the drive here, so everything should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Should be coming out February 2nd, and then, you know, so yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes!
It's all so all straightening out and hopefully released online on February 2nd?
Yes, on Bandcamp, and then on other platforms down the line.
Wonderful. Yeah. And you are a very prolific comic. I look forward to hearing what you have to say. Okay. About many things, because my husband and I, we've known you for a long time, and we still do the guy who wrote the clown music, and that's, I mean, that's seriously some, that's like 18 years ago, we still do some of your bits.
I got to put that down, Pat. I got to record
you
that.
You haven't recorded that one?
Not yet.
No, all right, then.
No. I haven't recorded anything. I mean, I've never released a CD before.
What?
It's my debut release.
What?
Yeah.
I should think of all this. Steve and I will write things down.
You've been trying
Thank
to find
you.
That sound what? Engineer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. How about what you know the old the gospel the music from Slaves? You doing is that on the?
Nope.
The you got to record that one.
I
what
will.
Time?
Oh yeah. Patty, let me know the things I used to do, and I will gladly do them again.
Yes, we you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No, I don't. Good luck in prison.
Patty, you know what? I'm glad I brought my pen and paper, because...
You didn't remember that one? You got to remember that one.
Not just now.
All right, then. And Jaron, where is In Fine Spirits?
Oh, we're located in Andersonville.
Come closer to your microphone so
we're located in Andersonville.
Oh, lovely.
5418 North Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a little bit north of Foster.
And how would you describe your store to our listeners? Is it kind of a wide range and various prices?
Well, I think what's important for us is... Good wine doesn't have to be expensive. It should just be kind of approachable, you know, kind of tailoring to what you like. It's
right.
not about what I like. It's kind of what you like and what experiences that you want. And it's my job to kind of give you that experience.
And people probably come in and they say, well, what goes with chocolate cake?
Yes.
They do. What goes with Big Mac?
That is a really good point. By the way, what does go with chocolate cake?
What goes with chocolate cake? Because I would do a Malbec, but that's just because I like Malbec.
I think if people asking those questions, you know what goes with chocolate cake? Rehab. If you ask what alcohol goes with chocolate cake, sir, you've got larger problems.
Is that a litmus test?
It helps
Wild
you
Irish off road.
The alcohol. Yeah. But anything.
Anything?
I mean, dark wines, dessert wines.
You asked me earlier if we should start with a white wine, go to a red wine, and then try the bourbon. I'm going to go ahead and jump the all those for our newsman, Rob Martier, who is done for the evening, and perhaps offer him some of the Buffalo Trace bourbon. Rob Martier, well, once again, I want to let you know that there are listeners who are texting in their favorable messages to you, and their thanks for you asking tougher questions than I was. But I don't think I asked. By the way, if you listen to Cabello's interview and Representative Harris's interview and Representative Kifowitz, all the same tone because I'm having a conversation. I will try to get my debate pants on next time, Mr. Martier. I didn't pack my debate pants. I just had my conversation pants on. That's all. I'm going to wear my debate boots.
Well, the question for Representative Lang was so much.
You said debate. That's what you when I asked you
right.
about it later.
It was more passionate.
Yes,
I think than I've been before.
Yeah, and I'm passionate about the things that are going wrong. I think a lot of people are. I just know Todd got nervous. Todd was like, "Was she?" Because the way we met was I was going to go talk to Representative Ives about funding for autism, and I was walking toward her, and he basically clotheslined me and said, "You don't want to talk to her."
I was just trying to make sure she was coached up and ready.
I was starting off with like too high. It was kind of like
you're coming in at a 10.
Yes, I was going like after a 10. I needed to go more for a 4.
Nice.
Somebody who might be have a more of a an open mind to what I was going to talk about.
I think Rich might have done the same thing tonight too. He came in at a 10, but then he called in to apologize.
Yes.
So he's
because Representative Ives, as I was explained by other people, is a veteran, has gone to she went to West Point.
Yeah.
And has voted against bills to provide services for veterans. So they wanted me to put that all in context when I was coming from. You can't go like I have a child with special needs and expect that to go anywhere.
She's the Clarence Thomas of veterans.
Hey Rob, how's the bourbon?
Yes,
it's very good.
How's the bourbon?
It's
excellent.
She was the one that got up and spoke about we don't even know who these babies' daddies are when it came to childcare funding in the bill. Craig's like, oh no, here we go again.
Oh, I remember that.
Here we go again.
Anyway,
I like how you asked me to co-sign only the craziest moment.
Yeah, but you were very kind to introduce me to one of Governor Rauner's aides, and I really did try being kind to her. But when she said we have to love people with autism differently, that's when I about cleared the bar. How's the wine? So what kind of wine are we drinking, Jaron?
Some white wine, a winter white, if you will, a little bit heavier. Something salty.
Oh, it
France.
Is. Yeah, it's not like terribly sweet. You know, it's a nice
chicken, like roasted chicken, something salty.
I'm thinking a lot of things, but
Absolutely.
This is delicious. Very cool.
Excellent.
So this is a winter wine. What separates?
I think it is. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit. The grapes that are used in it are kind of a fuller bodied. I mean, there's a touch of Chardonnay in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Grenache Blanc. Throw that out there. Mm-hmm. Some Roussanne.
Now, how does one study up to say those kinds of things on the radio?
I think you just read books over and over and over again, and then also taste the wine. I mean,
right.
A lot. You got to tasting every day. I mean, 50 wines, you can get a little bit bogged down. I mean, sometimes all I want is a glass of milk.
Do some people who come in taste the wines and then say things that make no sense to you, but you kind of humor them and treat them nice? And by the way, I apologize for doing that when I come into the store.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
good. Yeah, because I make things up. I say this tastes very woody.
Right.
Well, you know, it's funny because he just explained the white wine that you're drinking, and here I am nodding my head going, oh, yeah, that's I do. I understand that.
So you'd buy that, yeah.
I have no idea what you just said. I mean, it sounds good.
Do you drink wines, Rob?
Yeah, but you know what? Guilty as charged. I do, I think, like a lot of folks. First of all, it's price points,
mm-hmm.
and then the label. If the label catches my eye, I'll turn it over, I'll read about it.
Right.
And then go from there.
Yes, I have to agree. When it comes to red wines, if I see the certain keywords, like mocha, toffee gets my attention. Maybe berries, that kind of stuff. Okay. Those are the ones that grab me.
Yeah.
Sounds like
we'll get to those. We'll get to those in the red.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
What grabs you, Dwayne?
Words like free. I got it. Your money's no good here. You ever drink that? That's
no,
good.
I've never. Oh, no, I'm a comic. I get that one a lot. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I stayed in the business so long.
You've had enough.
That's
my brain.
That's a buzzkill, literally. Did you have some of the wine, Todd?
No, I haven't.
Oh, would you like some wine, or would you rather go right to the Buffalo Trace as
no,
well?
No, I'm just barely maintaining without having a drink. So everyone's so funny right now.
Oh.
It's resounding. I'm appreciating the company.
Oh, my pleasure. No, you've helped me out so much in Springfield and showed me around and been patient when I have not been. So I appreciate your time. I did. I started wearing boots in Springfield. I started out wearing heels, and I was like, I got to keep up with everybody in here. I can't be wearing heels. And also, Todd's like, what, 6'6"?
6'3".
I'm only 5'5 or so. So I don't notice how tall people are. I look up. So, Jaron, when people come in and they want to ask you about a wine, what's the best way to actually get, what are the right questions to find what you actually want as opposed to what goes with pizza?
Well, I guess I'll kind of answer you with a bunch of more questions.
There you go.
So what do you like? What do you, what, you know, something with more tannin, something a little bit more smooth.
What do tannins taste like?
Tannins, a little dry? It feels. It's a feel in your mouth.
Okay.
So kind of get in tune with all the senses in your mouth, and we're talking sweet, you know, acidic in the back, kind of keeps you watering.
Okay.
Tannin kind of clears out all the moisture in your mouth, so that's why a nice juicy steak goes well with that.
All right.
Okay. Does anybody ever ask you, what's the alcohol content in this one? I really don't care what it tastes like. Is it like 15.5?
You know, this past week I've had a couple of people come in and be like, you know, have you heard they're making like 16.5% wines? I'm like, oh. I believe it. Mm-hmm. Have I tasted some? Yeah.
Well, you want to be able to have a glass of wine throughout a meal. And if you have that one at 16, right, you're done. Why would you?
A glass and a half, it's over. You're not even making it.
How would you describe that? This has a crippling bouquet.
Well, we've tried the winter wine, which is a white wine. We're going to move on to the next one during the break. You're listening pretty late. We're hanging out with our friend Todd Belcour, who is an adjunct professor at Northwestern Law and also the co-founder of
the Chicago International Social Change Film Festival.
And find out more about them online. Google it and find some of their work there. We're also hanging out with Jaron from In Fine Spirits in Andersonville. The address on Clark?
5418
North Clark. Dwayne Kennedy, one of our favorites, and helped hijack the show on Monday. But it was, we had so much fun. It got me in trouble. That's fine. But
Really? Okay.
That's all right. No, everyone else is now punished.
Yeah, that's why the guard was asking me tonight when I pressed the button.
Yeah.
I had to tell him, who are you here for? Patty Vasquez show. Who are you here for? Patty Vasquez. You don't have to sign a waiver. Okay, I can't do it from the car, sir.
You can all thank Tim Slagle.
You know, Patty got fired. What?
Actually, Dwayne kind of calmed things down.
Very good.
The voice of reason.
I know. And that's
as always.
You should come with me to Springfield.
Exactly.
More after this on 720 WGN. Oh, before I forget, I want to thank our listener, Rich, who called back to say that he would like to join the conversation sometime. You're not in a timeout. We appreciate that you wanted to share your thoughts. But, it's always easier for us to convey what those are if you actually are in the conversation. So we encourage and welcome your thoughts at any time. We are hanging out with our friends in the Allstate Showcase studio. Todd, did you decide if you want your mic on or off? Did you decide yet? You're on now.
On for now.
On for now. Okay.
Mr. Kennedy is so hilarious, I just had to keep passing away from the mic.
I was hilarious till you listed all his credits. Like, oh, I better shut that.
No, please.
Professor of the universe.
Please. Dwayne has written for the finest talk shows that have been canceled.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, Orlando Jones.
Yeah.
George Lopez.
No.
I thought you wrote for George.
No.
Oh, Orlando. Oh, Kamau.
Yes, Kamau and Arsenio.
Oh, Arsenio.
Arsenio was good, though.
Yeah, it was good.
So sad.
Kamau was good, too.
Kamau
was good.
Yeah, Kamau's got another show coming on.
On CNN?
On CNN, August 24th. I haven't heard from the brother, but you know.
At least you can say cool. Magic Johnson.
Magic Johnson?
That you wrote for his show.
Did you?
No.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, you didn't. That one saying, wasn't,
I'm saying
you're not associated.
Yes. See,
that's otherwise.
You didn't
be,
like that show?
Was well, it, there was only one of them, so.
Was it? Like there wasn't just one episode.
No, I'm joking.
Right, but it wasn't on that long.
No, you blinked and it was over.
Yeah.
Magic
Johnson disappeared like magic.
We are also hanging out with Jaron from In Fine Spirits in Andersonville. They're at, one more time, 15?
5418.
That's what I heard.
North Clark.
5418. Let me write that. I'm going to write that down so that I don't have to ask every time. Todd Belcour, by the way, is with the is at Northwestern University. Northwestern University Law. Where'd you go to law school?
Northwestern as well.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I meant to. I just never got around to it.
I meant to.
I went to grad school at Northwestern for history. A lot of the lawyers I know tell me not to bother.
Why?
I don't know.
They just don't like their jobs.
And you do. You seem to be very passionate about what you do.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's you have found. What drew you to working with poverty law, with individuals who've been incarcerated and their lives afterwards? What drew you to that?
That's easy. I grew up poor, and it was like to have an advocate to make opportunities available for me, being my mother, and I want to be that advocate for someone else.
See, go where you're
hurt.
I know. Dwayne.
That's all noble and meaningful.
I know. And he's good. Like he has a lot of friends down in Springfield. People admire him. I know.
That brother's significant.
You're not doing too much right now.
What do you do, Dwayne? I juggle. Spin plates and stuff.
And Dwayne's CD comes out, juggling not available on the CD on Monday.
That bit didn't go over.
No, it's hard to hear. Unless you've got, like, you know, musical balls. That sounded wrong. I apologize to everyone involved.
That's
Jared.
3 o'clock segment.
Hey, by the way, did you see that Matt Bubala is now the DNA info? He's the radio editor.
Matt Bubala
has been promoted to DNA info or higher.
Basically taking over from John Hanson.
Now we can have him on our show as John Hanson. We have to ask him to be John Hanson. Is that going
to
be
weird? We have to ask him to embody John Hanson.
Is it weird that we didn't invite him on our show before he became the DNA info?
I mean, he's on every Friday when you guys do Crosstalk.
Yeah, he's got his own. I mean, I don't have other hosts on the show.
Yeah.
But now
Hannah Stanley a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
And Amy Guth we've had on before.
I haven't had Matt. I feel bad now. Right. I probably should have done before
Cochran's
he took
been
over.
On the show before. I mean, it's fine. I'm sure Bill and Wendy, they're always welcome to do the show.
Rob Martier is enjoying some bourbon, but we have been, you've shared some red wine with us, Jaron. What are we having now?
So we're having Cabernet, 100% mm-hmm. Cabernet. Now, instead of coming from Napa, a little bit more expensive land out there, so the price tends to go up. This is coming from Lodi, a little bit south of there. A couple of two winemakers that have their own labels kind of converged and made an easy drinking Cabernet. I mean, I think if anything with this wine, you feel the smoothness of it, the silkiness of it all.
That's a good way to describe it, because I was going to say, I mean, I drink I'll have Yellowtail Cabernet. When you said 100% Cabernet, how is this different from, let's say, a Yellowtail?
Well, honestly, I mean, I just know it's 100% Cabernet, but, you know, by law, you only have to use 75% in the United States. It has to be Cabernet, and then you can throw everything in there but the kitchen sink.
Right, because it's not, like, it's not dry. Usually you'll have a Cabernet that sort of dries out. Like, this, I mean, this is, like you said, it's much smoother. And this seems like it would go with a wider range of things, whereas a Cabernet, a less expensive one, would probably be kind of more specific.
Well, this is only $21 also. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a range of things that it can go with, and just kind of not only...
From, like,
range. Pastas.
Pizza at home. You make burgers on the grill.
Chocolate cake.
From enjoying an evening of Brahms to punching an Uber driver.
Oh.
But it's got the label on it. It's got the grasshopper. So
would that be a label?
Would that grab your attention?
It's
a Turner.
Yeah.
I think he would actually be drawn to the back of that bottle more than the front of the bottle, because it looks a little bit like a whiskey bottle.
Yeah, right.
It does. Yeah.
That other side kind of freaks me out.
Yeah. It looks a little more like a little JD.
Big old bug on that.
I've got a legitimate wine question for you. I've driven past it so many times.
What have mine been?
Excuse me. A man has to say some things.
Yeah. Listen. Yes, you are.
Yeah, that's enough, little lady. Listen,
as opposed to my ignorant comment before, yours have been fine.
Yours is fine, too.
Hold on, everyone. Wait, we have a legitimate question coming in. There's a legitimate question coming in.
Do we have a jingle for the legitimate question?
We need a jingle
sounder?
For that. Yeah.
Will it be the same for Don't Be an Asshole?
Similar, but voiced differently.
Here's a legitimate question.
Here it comes. The Niagara region. I see all kind of grapes being grown up there. What comes out of that area? What kind of wines?
You see, like, more ice vines. Because of the cold, so they'll leave the grapes on the vines a little bit longer. They'll freeze over and then press those grapes. So, like,
they come in the ice wines come in the smaller bottles, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
A little bit more concentrated with the alcohol, but sweeter too.
Okay.
More dessert wines.
There you go. All right.
Yeah. This is I'm really enjoying this one, the Cabernet. What's the name of this bottle?
It's called The Fabulist.
The Fabulist. That's pretty spectacular. I enjoy that very much. Coming up after the news. Now, Roger, I want to appreciate the fact that – I want to tell you that I appreciate the fact that you've sent your reviews again. I feel bad because I have to go through all of the ones that we've had for a while. My husband he's like, I think I heard this one. We play this game called What's in the Box, and we'll take two callers to play. We have an Apt Electronics gift card. You can go to apt.com for more information about their fine products, and Lou Malnati's gift card. Go to loumalnati.com for over 40 locations in the Chicagoland area, and even have it ordered anywhere you are in the country. You don't have to be just in the Chicagoland area to win our game or play our game. You're a winner either way. But Roger, can we bring you some wine? I know that you're here for a long time. Maybe a glass you want to set aside.
I'm fine.
Okay.
I have my Pellegrino here.
I hate leaving you out.
No, I'm good. That's
all right.
I don't drink that much. I rarely have alcohol anymore.
I wasn't sure if this piqued your interest.
I more than covered for it when I was young.
I'll take Roger's portion.
Well, there you go. Fair enough. Are you staying for what's in the box?
I can also take Robert's portion. You know.
I still have forgot to order pizza. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and I'm always excited when we have new guests in the studio, and in particular when they get a chance to play one of our regular games. Well, our most popular game is What's in the Box? And again, you know, we haven't mentioned this in a while, but we had a listener who picked the name of the segment, so we want to thank him once again. We probably should know who that is. I don't have it written down anywhere, but thank you to the listener who named this game for us. He won something as well, as will our contestants, Dave and Heidi. Let's check in with Dave real quick here. Hey, Dave, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
Have you heard us play What's in the Box before?
I've heard, but I've never played.
Well, welcome to the game. I'm so excited that you know you're familiar with the game. Let me talk to Heidi real quick. Hi, Heidi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very well. Are you driving right now?
I am.
All right. So be careful, because I don't know.
Absolutely.
Okay. Excellent. Have you heard us play What's in the Box before?
I have.
Oh, wonderful. We have two contestants that know. So for those of you who've never heard us play this game, and what I love about our show is that we are in the middle of the night. You can hear us for just a long distance. You can hear us all the way into Canada and Iowa. Maybe you're sitting there thinking, who do I vote for? I'm going to turn the radio on. Oh, what's in the box? There's something new to think about. And I do a lot of shopping online, and a lot. I don't actually have time to go to the stores anymore, so most of it is online. And I sometimes will check through the reviews. I try to go for 4 stars or more and filter it that way. And I read through the reviews to see what people like and don't like. I really like the people who do the pros and cons. That's kind of nice. And what I was struck by was a wide range of things. We've learned that people will write reviews for gummy bears and for BB guns and for adult toys and for hand mixers. Adult toys was the one that jumped out at me, as it might have for you. And what we've done is we've collected some reviews from a website. And one set of reviews are from appliances, maybe a blender or a toaster, and the other are for adult toys. And our contestants have to decide whether the review we read for them is for a toy or an appliance. And those are your responses, toy or appliance. And I think we'll start with Rob Martier. You're going to be reading for Dave.
So all right, Dave, you ready?
Yes, I am.
Here we go. Now, this is being read verbatim. Work. I wouldn't be out a ton of cash. I ordered it, and this thing has no problems getting the job done.
Appliance.
Dave, it's a toy, my friend. I'm so sorry.
Some people think of it as work, and that's a shame. You should really think of it as play. But
Sick mind.
I don't know about sick. Just, you know, they just have an objective in mind. Roger Badish,
yes.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, except I forgot there was a warning in our email this morning that the email was messing up.
Oh, and you can't pull it up?
Well, I have it. Thank goodness it's still connected on my phone, but I've got it.
Okay.
So all good. I'm just having problems with other stuff, but that's okay.
Roger likes homework. He pulls his own.
I do. I was having fun tonight.
It is a lot of fun to do this.
Yes, they are.
Okay, so Roger, you are reading for Heidi. We are. It's a 0-0 game so far.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Here we go, Heidi.
Roger.
Okay. I love her voice.
Sturdy,
heavy duty. Wait, there's an exclamation point in there. Should I add that? Okay. Sturdy, heavy duty. Pleasant to look at. Works well. Great buy.
Oh, I'm going to have to go with appliance on that one.
Ooh, you are so good.
I love when Roger gets excited for our contestants.
I love it when they answer it right. And because I try to fool them, you know that.
I know you do. Yeah. And you do a very good job.
Well, thank you very much.
At that. Dwayne Kennedy will be reading for Dave.
Okay, Dave, here we go. It has the power for show. I just wish they had a slower speed. Mm-hmm. Yes. What'd you say? What'd he
toy.
Say? Oh, no. He's wrong.
Oh,
no. No, that's it. No, sir. It's an appliance.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you don't want it to be completely pureed. You like it to be a little bit chunky.
Hey.
I said chunky. Jaron, will you please read for Heidi?
Alrighty, Heidi,
She's ahead, 1-0.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I have been looking for a machine like this for quite a while, and there's nothing to complain about.
A machine like that? Oh, is there nothing on there?
Ooh. A machine. Well, machine, I'm going to have to go with appliance again.
Ding, ding, ding.
There you go.
Wow. Yay.
I call mine a machine. Go ahead, Todd. Would you please read for Dave? Dave is behind, and now he needs to start catching up because Heidi could win on her next question.
Dave is going to be a comeback kid. I'm certain of it.
Okay.
Okay. Reading verbatim. It's okay. I'm not that impressed.
Oh, that's a sad one.
Toy.
You got it, Dave.
Hey!
Dave's on the board.
There we go. It's a 2-1 game now. So Rob Martier will be reading for Heidi, and this could be for – we changed it. We decided to go for best of three. So for first of three. So.
That toy culminated in an explosion of sadness.
Now, Heidi.
Okay, Rob, okay. What's in the box?
This one's going to be quick.
Okay, Rob.
Worth toy. Every penny.
Oh.
Worth every penny.
Oh, I'm going to have to go with toy on that
there
one.
There we go.
Ding, ding, ding. Well done.
That was a fast game. Heidi, thank you so much for playing. And hold on the line. Craig will take your information. And you have a choice of Apt Electronics or Lou Malnati's Pizza. Dave, you as well. Well, you'll get whatever Heidi doesn't pick. So that works out very well for everybody.
I had a blast.
Oh, thank you so much for calling in, Dave.
You.
Yeah, have a wonderful evening. Have a wonderful weekend. Yeah, that was fun. I guess, I don't know, I think I might go back to best of five next time, don't you think?
That went quick.
It did.
It was best of three on that one?
I did best of three. Look at Roger's like, was that it? Are we done?
No, I'm...
He's like, we did so much work.
Read my question anyway. I can't express it now, but I like it.
Yeah, I went on the opinion of my husband. And
well,
I,
as we've noticed sometimes in this game,
level, mm-hmm.
a lot of people get them wrong. Yes. And so then it takes a long time. So we switched to three, assuming that. And then Heidi just killed it. She didn't get any wrong.
She didn't get any wrong. And then Dave got on the board.
Got on the board late.
Yeah. All right. It's all right, Dave. We are enjoying our lovely game of What's in the Box with some Buffalo Trace bourbon from In Fine Spirits at 5418 North Clark. I didn't even look. I have it somewhere. There it is. And now tell us a little bit about Bourbon Trace and how it compares to other bourbons.
Well, so our Buffalo Trace is a single barrel bottling. They'll send us about 3 samples of different barrels, and we have the task of deciding which one that we like the best and kind of deciding in July as to like how it's going to be in January, February. Mm-hmm. So thinking kind of cold weather when we pick it and something that can mix, something that you can have straight, you know, feel confidence in whatever your cocktail is.
Okay. And how it now, because I think this has a little bit, if I was to describe it on the label, there's a little bit of a caramel in that one.
Absolutely.
So I did that. So I've been having, that means I've been drinking too much bourbon.
She
didn't
get it right on
You've
the wine.
You've been drinking the good bourbon, yeah.
Well, that's been the beauty is that bourbon has been, for some reason in the last year or two, something that people really are interested in sort of, you know, understanding the notes of it in the way you do wine. But because you can mix it, they also want to understand how it goes with ginger ale or mm-hmm. how it is, you know, with some ice. Tell us a little bit about when you put ice in it, because someone told me that opens it up a little bit. Is that really the case?
Absolutely. And you know, the water that they're using in Kentucky, I mean, that comes through a limestone bed, so it's already kind of filtered too. So like water is very important when you want to, you know, open up those aromas. And mm-hmm. You know, tap water, you can use it, but there are imperfections in tap water.
Yeah, they're saying that in Flint.
Right?
I
mean, right. Bottled in
bottled
Flint.
Water.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
Bottled water is fine. You know, even filtered water.
Right.
And you can go kind of like drop by drop. And just, right. I mean, that's what the Scotch drinkers do.
Well, because they're making ice trays now that have like these sort of like big ice cubes that people are putting in their bourbon.
And so then that helps to like not dilute it as much.
Right.
Sometimes you're already starting with exactly.
That's a new trend, the big ice cube.
The big ice cube. Yeah.
It keeps it colder.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've seen those. Like, that's who discovered that? Who invented that?
Mm-hmm.
Just
somebody
put some water in his baseball cap, stuck it in the freezer.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, now you can get like ice cube shaped
ice maker,
stars.
Man? I can't find it. Get that baseball cap real quick.
Right. Not the one you wear all the time.
Yeah, but freezing will take care of anything.
Right.
So this is a lovely bourbon. Now, Jaron, I don't know if you want to hang out. We're going to talk a little bit about what's in the news. So you're welcome to hang out and join us on that. And Todd, you as well. We've got Rob Martier and Dwayne Kennedy. We've got Jaron from In Fine Spirits and Todd Belcourt, who is an adjunct professor at Northwestern Law. And he's hoping that no one from his department is listening right now. More after this on 720 WGN. I feel like it's, is it Halloween in January? What did you pick there for the bump? Todd Belcour is going to hang out. You don't have to leave the studio. We've got chairs for you to hang out. You don't have to, just because you're my off computer, the microphone.
By the way, my computer froze and I just hit stuff.
That just hit stuff? That's your stuff? Todd's grab a chair. There's a chair over here next to Rob Martier if you'd like over here. And we are about to do weekend wind up. I'm thrown off because Elliot Serrano was not able to make it to the beginning of the show and he's here now.
Yay, Elliot.
Hey, Roger. Hey, everybody. I've been listening to the show on the whole evening in the middle of my little adventure. So y'all are like funny people and great.
Is it weird to listen to the show when you're not here?
I know because I know what happens during the commercial break. So every time you went to a commercial, I'm like, oh, man, I wish I were there right now.
There wasn't as much swearing off
no?
there. No? No. No.
So I didn't have access to the video, so I know stuff.
Would you like some Buffalo Trace?
Yes,
I think you need
please.
Some bourbon. Do we have
please.
A... We need to get a cup for...
With the evening I've been having, I definitely could use some bourbon.
For those of you who are new to the show, Elliot Serrano is our chief geek officer. He is all things sci-fi, Star Wars, Star Trek, superheroes. Actually, I've been asked to be on the panel at a C2E2 that I think I have to turn down because I triple booked the date.
Which?
The geek parenting.
What do you like an airline now?
Absolutely
why
perfect
can't you
for
do
me. Because I have two gigs. I have two gigs in Wisconsin. I have that I double booked, and I if Jimmy McHugh's listening, he'll know that I double booked on his date as well as Jerry up in Elkhorn. Have you done that one?
Jerry Donovan?
No.
No, Jerry Walsky.
Yes.
I have done that.
Yeah, it's a great room. So
I thought I was going to die.
Why?
No, the room was fine. Just getting there.
Yes, in March,
the
wintertime.
In the wintertime.
Yeah.
And it was dark. I'd never been there. And the lakes come right up to the road.
Yes.
I was like, man, if I just veer off a little bit,
just
I'm a dead
bit.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
But you made it.
Yeah, it was fine.
So I got to pick one of those. Triple booked March
19th. Can I ask Elliot a quick question?
Yes, sir.
A quick question from
Elliot. Did you check the green room yet?
No, I ran straight in here.
Oh, I almost gave some of your comics away to Todd. But
there's
Todd,
like three
Todd
signs on top there.
I saw that.
Elliot Serrano.
There's so many of
them.
I said, pick out something and then we can ask Elliot later.
Well, I know.
I didn't say that. No. No. That's not how I are. Well, lawyers, I don't. Look, that was
counselor?
Isn't that a little privilege information? Elliot, we'll catch up with what happened to you in just a little bit because
sure.
You relax and enjoy. We'll talk a little bit about what's in the news because the Iowa caucus is coming up on Monday. And did you watch the debate at all? I know we talked a little bit about it last night.
I did, yeah, as much as I could. It was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Without the Donald on board, it was, I think, a bit more substantive, not quite as much the circus as it usually has been. So it was, you know, I thought... Ted Cruz certainly had the target on his back, so he took the large.
Yeah, but he tried making jokes, didn't he? Try to like tease it, like he thought
he
that
did.
That was, did you watch
very,
Jared?
Which,
you watched?
Yeah, which is very awkward.
I caught the highlights.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like Donald Trump's not. I mean, I guess he's trying to be funny, but he never wavers from that persona. Whether it's, do you think it's real, Dwayne?
You know what? You know that old expression about first you do the act, then the act does you.
Yes.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And now the act is doing him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's a government operative.
False flag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For the Clinton campaign, false
yes,
flag?
Yes, for liberals in general. It's like, you know, we can't just survey people and say, hey, are you a racist? No. Everybody's going to say no.
Ask them flat out.
Everybody
right?
knows. So we'll send Donald out there like the Pied Piper of bigots.
Draw them out.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. but can you imagine asking somebody like a Donald Trump, hey, are you a racist? Yes, 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 I am.
But you have to have him hooked up to something.
Right. Well, Donald will admit it, and then people will get behind him. See, he's just saying what everybody's thinking.
Yeah.
Everybody?
But everybody, yeah, why are they speaking for that? You're not speaking for me.
No.
No. It's very surreal.
Right.
And we haven't played any of our Trumpeteer music. I don't know if you saw these little girls that were dancing and singing.
Oh, yeah. The Trump rally.
Yeah. But, I mean, his numbers are pretty big. I mean, what is it outside of the state of Iowa? Because right now it was at 37%
mm-hmm.
before the debate.
Yeah.
How much of a slide was it after his no-show?
I didn't look at the exact numbers. It was negligible, although he did trend down a little bit because
right.
he didn't appear.
Yeah, trending
down
is like jeez, less. Yeah. How do they measure that? Like less tweeting? I don't know.
Well, it's you know, I usually go to Real Clear Politics because mm-hmm. they take the average of a lot of national polls,
right?
And that seems to be a more accurate indicator of what's going on. But, yeah, you know, he got a bit of a hit, but, you know, we'll see what happens on Monday.
I'm really curious. Ted Cruz at times has said that they were asking mean questions. Are any of the questions actually mean? Are these just debate questions, or have they gotten meaner?
What were the mean questions?
I don't know. He got upset, and he said that you guys keep asking mean questions, and he threatened to walk off the stage.
I would have loved to have seen that.
That's what I want to see in a world leader.
Yeah, well, I'm not putting up with this anymore.
Right,
yeah.
Right. You guys stop it.
Just bullies.
Can someone explain to me how Ted Cruz is even able to run for president, considering he was born in Canada? Okay, I know the whole argument around that. But after the whole...
Todd? I knew I had some
Todd, here, come closer to your microphone. Yeah. All the way up.
Well, John McCain was able to run.
No,
well,
I didn't anticipate I'd be here to represent Ted Cruz's position, but... the law is pretty well settled. As long as one of your family members is of the country, and even if you're born outside the country, you're permitted to come back in. Wait, and have
remember, citizenship. Remember how we had a certain guy who was born of a Kenyan father, and his mother was.
There's other reasons citizen. Why people cast aspersions on his origin. Well, that I'd rather not talk about.
Well, no, but no, you're
so diplomatic.
You're absolutely right. The thing is, what's getting me is how. That was appropriate to take that particular shot at him by what? Who? Donald Trump himself. Mm-hmm. And yet you can
repeatedly.
use the exact same argument against Ted Cruz.
Well, Trump did use that against Cruz for what it's worth.
Yes. And Ted Cruz dismissed it, even though he never dismissed it when that was put up against Obama. And no one really points out that hypocrisy there to me.
Well, I don't think people spend enough time documenting the fact that Barack Obama is the most disrespected president of all time.
I agree.
I don't want to. I should have been gone. Well,
Todd, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but that is twofold. I will grant anyone that part of it's because of race, and part of it's because of policy. And I use the example of 2010, 2 years into his first term, when the bloom was still supposedly on the rose, there were policies that people didn't like, which kept Democrats away from the polls and inspired Republicans to go to the polls.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, again, I will never discount the fact that race enters into the fact that he is a disrespected president. But there are also some policies that people find questionable. So it does cut
no
both
question.
Ways.
I mean, there's no question. I mean, if you saw the debate yesterday, which I make it a point to watch all the debates, no matter what side represented, is to see that people are still running against Barack Obama, even though he's not going to be on the ticket,
right?
Even though he's not, actually endorsing a candidate. It's clear that Hillary Clinton did say she'd carry on a lot of the policies, but it's interesting that some of the biggest applause lines relate to saying negative things about our current president, who everyone should be rooting for, versus the actual candidate.
Well, and President Obama has said in the past that if he were to run for a third term, he feels as though he'd be able to win.
Heck yeah!
but I'm just saying. No, I mean, look.
That's gotta make people upset.
If we're doing this, then and he has said that again. Look, there are a lot of people that love him, and I think there are some things that he's done that he or strike that there are some things that he's tried to do that would have been beneficial, but again, there have been some roadblocks, there have been some issues in terms of diplomacy and the subtleties, which you know all too well going down to Springfield. There is a nuance to politics.
Well, speaking of which, because Todd has been going down to Springfield for a while, when you see that someone has taken over the executive branch of the state of Illinois and you have watched representatives and senators debate things on the floor, policies, we've talked about, Rob, you've mentioned, we have these ideals. We have these things that we represent. When you have someone who rises, as Donald Trump is trying to, the top position in the country, what does he bring that he knows, understands the nuances of politics? Because Governor Rauner.
You can say nothing.
Trap questions here. No, I think I honestly don't believe that Trump believes all the stuff he says.
Okay.
If you listen to and actually look up his actual policies, he's actually pretty moderate. And in fact, he's more to the left than Hillary Clinton. I think what he's capitalizing on is the fact that he's just a master marketer. He understands how to make sure that people hear his story, hear his rhetoric, and captures news cycles without having to spend the money on the ads and all the things that other people may have to do, because he knows how to capture imagination of the people who are really looking for something to hang their hat on, some red meat to eat.
So does that mean that...
Or to hang their hood on.
Which well, one? The white pointed one?
Yeah. Monogrammed in his case. So then does that mean that because of the rhetoric he uses does seem to stir up an element that, of anger? And I mentioned this from the very beginning. Because I have never seen liberals get this angry. Like the things that Bernie Sanders says, people are like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. We should have more access to resources and to healthcare and to education. Like there's nothing of anger that people are responding to. So are conservatives angry?
Well, conservatives on the right, when Bernie opens his mouth, he says, everybody's going to have $40 an hour job and we're going to give away free Priuses and free lunches 365 days a year.
That sounds really nice.
Okay, conservatives, okay, Huey Long.
No, I'm just saying. No, but well, look, hey,
I want a free Prius.
Conservatives get upset.
Chicken in every pot and a car in every driveway.
Bernie Sanders starts to talk about, you know, what he would like to do. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people out there that get upset. There's one thing that Bernie Sanders said.
They get upset about Bernie Sanders?
About his policies, about what he would like to try to do.
But that wasn't my question. My question was, but liberals don't seem to get as riled up and angry and spew out things. And I could be wrong. I mean, I've been told before by Steve Cochran that liberals say as hateful and ugly things as conservatives do.
There's Rachel Maddow. There's Bob Beckel.
But calling people ugly and fat. Well, I guess I think that liberals do this with Chris Christie, and they do make fun of like when he wears baseball pants.
Bill Maher referred to Sarah Palin's daughter in the C word as the C word, you know, so to say that liberals don't get as excited as conservatives do, I think is a bit disingenuous. The cycle that we are in now from the time I'll even go back to George Bush as president.
You're right. I think you're right about that.
George Bush as president, he angered a lot of people on the left. So now you fast forward to where we are now and it's just gotten so heated. I mean, we are white hot politics right now.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, nothing.
I'm sorry.
Right. Okay.
Come on. Ben Carson's in the race.
He is. Does he know it?
but he's...
Ben, you're on. I am.
Oh, no.
He's furious.
Well,
right.
I mean, I think to the point, though, I think for the candidates that are making a really vested attempt to try to indicate that they're willing to work with both sides, I don't feel like they don't get a lot of camera time, and I don't feel like they get a lot of questions pointed their way. I mean, you got people like Kasich, you got people like Christie.
Is it Kasich? Yeah. Now we're going to have this argument about Kasich or Kasich. I'm just teasing. We had this last night.
Oh, well, I'm happy to see them.
Is Kasich getting enough time as far as the questions
that
are directed?
He's not bringing a lot of energy.
Okay.
But in terms of his actual, you know, credentials, I mean, he's one of the top runners, you would think.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of, you know, his ability to unite the country, I mean, that's what we should be looking for no matter who's running. He's more likely of a candidate to do that than a lot of people who are on the stage.
Well, and look at the makeup of Ohio as well. That's a great cross-section of the United States. By and large, a blue state, but he's been able to make it work for the people of Ohio because there have been concessions.
Mm-hmm. You know what people respond to sometimes more than policy? Theater.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And well, that's been
theater.
The case. And so is Bernie Sanders.
He's the public speaker.
Yes. Theater. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know.
He can control the masses.
Yeah.
With what he says.
Mm.
Well, Rubio and Cruz are decent at that as well, though. I mean, I don't know if you saw the actual debate. I mean, I've never seen anyone sidestep a question as well as Cruz did yesterday. I was actually impressed. I was telling my mom today. I was like, this dude, they had video of the man, you know, advocating vehemently in favor of providing some sort of immigration reform. And he was just saying he couched it as he was acting that he was an advocate for it. So no, I swear to God.
I was posing.
No. So then he could, you know, use the Democrats' language against them later, and it was really just a poison pill.
Wow.
And I found myself believing it. And you know, and Megyn Kelly was like, You're right, Ted Cruz. That's exactly what had happened.
Well,
we're so late for the news.
Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, all of these guys, great orators, and you sit in front of them and you listen, you hang on every word that comes out of their mouths. That's the brilliance.
Well, and I think that, and I'm not finding anybody in this race, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, that does that, that is inspiring or that I want to listen to. I just don't. I want to thank my guests. I'm going to hang on to Elliot and Dwayne, if you don't mind. Todd, I need your seats. And Rob and Jaron, thank you so much. In Fine Spirits at 5418 North Clark in Andersonville. Some really great stuff. Thank you for all the, we loved the Fabulist. Wine was fantastic. Your Winter White and Buffalo Trace. And go find him. We'll have you again soon.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And Todd, where can people find I feel like the panel has broken off into discretion over here.
Pardon me.
Find more information about what you do, the website for...
At Todd Belcore, T-O-D-D, B as in boy, E-L-C-O-R-E as the Twitter handle, and also ChicagoSocialChange.org for the film festival, mm-hmm. or the acronym for that, with the longest acronym of all time, C-I-S-C-F-F. We call it SISF for fun. SISF. Hopefully that helps somebody remember it.
And I'll see you in a couple weeks for the
Absolutely
budget address.
Look forward to it.
And Rob Martire, you have Saturdays off now?
Are I
you?
Do. Yeah.
Excellent.
But I've got four kids. Yeah.
I'll see you on
Monday.
I've got
ballet tomorrow and hockey on Sunday.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Here with your news a little bit late, and I apologize. Sorry, Stephanie. Here's Roger Bat. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And we've been talking about this a little bit throughout the week about women in comedy and what's been going on in social media. You may have seen the article in the Chicago Tribune about we also did talk about Beth Stelling earlier in the year. And I'm welcoming into the studio new guests to the show, Victoria Elena Nonez and Caroline Sabatier. Oh my goodness! Did I say that right? So, can you mark that? Mark that with everything else that we've things I get right.
That's another mark for tonight.
Ding ding
mark
ding!
For
Yay! And I've asked Elliot Serrano and Dwayne Kennedy to join us as well, but I want to focus on what these young ladies are involved in. I received an email a couple weeks ago, and I didn't respond right away because I wasn't sure where I'd be, and I'm just so bad at saying no to people.
Yeah.
I'll be out of town the week that you are having an event at the Laugh Factory, which right. begins February 10th.
February 9th, Tuesday. But
okay.
Yes.
Oh, no, I can't make that. Okay.
Now she has to come, you guys.
Oh, no.
You outed yourself.
So explain to us, either one of you, I'm not sure if Victoria, you want to take this. How did Women in Comedy come about?
That's a great question. So there was an organization that existed previously called Chicago Ladies in Comedy,
mm-hmm.
and that's been around for a handful of years. The woman who was running it at the time, Rebecca Grossman, saw what I was doing with Women in Comedy, and she approached me and said, hey, you know, why don't we merge these things together and let's make this thing happen. And so now it's kind of been moving forward. So Women in Comedy, as the name and sort of what we're doing, just really got started last year. And our first official event was in December. We had a speed networking event for women in the industry, and it was very successful. Everybody had a great time. And now all of this is happening, which is crazy.
Yeah. Well, because and I saw in the piece that was in the Chicago Tribune that Beth Stelling, who came forward with her story of abuse and being attacked by her boyfriend, who was also in comedy,
right.
I think made people feel a little bit more, because I think I started telling stories to people about what happened to me early in my career and throughout my career, the little things, the big things that, you know, have a cumulative effect of shaping your career, shaping how you stand behind a microphone or on stage with other performers. And we kind of accept it. And when Beth Stelling came forward, it was like, this is what happens when we blame ourselves,
right.
when we, you know, and the thing is, like, we blame ourselves for letting it happen a lot of times. So I want to thank you for giving everyone a format, whether it's a female comedian or male, a place to feel safe and tell these stories.
Well, thank you. I think it's been really important, and I'm glad that people were able to, I think the anonymous format is what helped people feel safe, mm-hmm. right? Because a big reason why people weren't coming forward was because of the backlash and because of the worries about what is this going to mean for my career? What are the repercussions?
Right.
So I'm glad that it went as well as it did, and that it's inspired people to sort of start coming forward and telling those stories, not anonymously anymore. They're saying, like, this is what happened to me at this place at this time with this person,
right.
and I think it's really powerful, so it's exciting.
It is. And Caroline, now where are you from originally?
I'm originally from the Boston area.
And did you do comedy in Boston?
I didn't. I actually started out in musical theater.
That seems like a logical progression.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I was drawn to comedy after I graduated with my musical theater degree. Because of the opportunity it provides to kind of express your own opinions and ideas about things, mm-hmm. more so than traditional theater does. So that's how I initially ended up here, to kind of see how that was going to go for me.
And were you drawn by the sketch comedy scene, the improv?
I was.
And many people are. This is where you go to be a sketch comic or improv mm-hmm. artist. Stand-up comedy is kind of one of those things where New York, L.A. seem to be the big draws, don't you think, Dwayne? I didn't give you my... We're not listening to men right now.
Sorry, you don't get a seat at the table tonight. Oopsies.
Sit under the table, sir.
Yeah, no.
And shut up. I think New York and L.A. certainly more for career opportunities, yeah, but Chicago is the place where you go, not only place, but where you... Chicago's place where you become good,
mm-hmm.
and then New York and L.A. are the places where you go
to ascend in the field in right. comedy and show right. business.
But Chicago for many people for sketch and improv is a destination because this is where you can ascend because they draw so strongly for Saturday Night Live, for any of the sketch shows. They come here, and even, you know, there are so many shows now filming here. There are opportunities that there weren't before.
Right.
So what did you think when you came to Chicago, Caroline? What were your some of your early experiences of taking classes and studying sketch and improv?
You know, I initially came here pretty much by myself. I showed up with a couple suitcases and just wanted to see how it was going to go. So I got really involved in the comedy community really quickly, which I think is kind of a unique aspect of the Chicago comedy scene, is that it is really sort of involved. Everyone kind of knows each other. Mm-hmm. You are kind of drawn in very quickly. And so I think that I initially had a lot of really positive experiences. I had a lot of great teachers. I was doing a lot of different shows at a lot of different theaters, and I was involved in the improv and the sketch and the stand-up scenes. And it was only later that I started to notice sort of some of the problems with sexism in the community, and it took me a while to kind of realize what that meant for me and what that meant for kind of all of us. And I think it's really taken me a few years to kind of get to where we are today, and this week particularly with everything that's been happening. So it's been definitely a journey going up to this point.
And what kind of do you think spawned this? It was one post from a woman who said that she had this experience at I.O. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened this week that sort of...
Yeah, I think people are a little confused. And actually what we're working on right now, and what all of us ladies, we just had a little fun work fest before we got here. But we're working on creating a timeline of events for sort of what we see as a collective movement in mm-hmm. the community and a cultural shift. So I think people are a little confused just because of the way that the media has been reporting different things. I think it's been easy to pinpoint it. And
that's why I invited you.
Right. So like we're trying, everybody's trying to mark the catalyst as like Sharna said these bad things and then the ladies came out, you know, and like that's really not what's happened here. I think it's been these conversations have been happening for a long time. It's like you're saying, you've had these experiences.
Right,
you know, like,
but it's all fractured.
Right? Sure, yeah. Sure. So it's been going on forever. We've been having these conversations internally forever. And then, you know, I think the main catalysts, honestly, were the Beth Stelling article, the one in the BuzzFeed. And then I do think that the second big catalyst was the anonymous Google form that I posted up, which let people share their stories. So after that came out, from my understanding, Sharna was alerted by a friend of hers that, hey, there's these anonymous posts going up and people are talking about it. And then she responded negatively to that. And then a conversation spawned. She said some things that people didn't like, and then everybody started attacking her.
We need to explain who Sharna Halpern
is. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, so, you're not. Don't be sorry. I just realized we in the room are like, oh, Sharna Halpern.
Sure, sure. Oh, old Sharna. Yeah. We're besties.
Written books about it.
Yeah,
truth and comedy.
Yeah, yeah. Sharna Halpern is the head of the Improv Olympic Theater, and she's an amazing businesswoman who, you know, saw talent with Del Close, and she decided to kind of branch off from Second City and start her own comedy theater, and it's been very successful. And, you know, a lot of the people that have trained at Second City and are sort of seen as, you know, Second City's like the hub, but almost everyone who's been on, you know, at Second City or on SNL has also trained at the Improv Olympic, and that's what Sharna heads up. So,
yeah, and I don't know, Dwayne, have you ever studied improv or sketch?
No, I've been around it some.
Yeah, because I tried. I did Players Workshop, which is a totally different body, which was Diane Forsberg, her kids, Eric and Leanne. I want to say her. I can't remember her first name, but wonderful instructors. For me, improv was the kind of thing where it's such a collaborative effort. And I was always more drawn to telling personal autobiographical mm-hmm. stories. Mm-hmm. So that's why I invited Sharna onto the show, because and hopefully she'll be on the next couple of weeks, because I have no skin in the taking classes aspect of it. I won't attack or defend, because I don't know what that experience is like.
Right.
I have a different experience as a stand-up comic. I've been doing this for over 15 years, and I say 15 to sound younger. Let's just put it that way. Dwayne has a very good idea of how long I've been doing comedy.
We've been doing it since Thursday.
Yes.
And, you know.
Amateurs.
Yeah.
I thought you had to be at least 21 to start doing comedy.
And I was. Okay. Maybe 19. Sure? Let's say 15. Yeah. Something like that. I keep changing it. But, you know, one of the things that we, as you said, we talk about it like amongst ourselves, and there's all these different groups. And now you've come to a place where everyone's kind of posting it and saying, saying this. I've seen a stand-up comic very openly express, and she's a stand-up and has studied at IO. Emily Galati has posted on Facebook her experience and how hard she moved here for that, mm-hmm. and how disheartening that was. And I think what happened to Sharna and to a lot of people when we start telling these stories is nobody wants to feel like they've done something wrong.
Right.
And that's the case whenever we talk about last year with catcalling and any kind of, you know, when we're put in a position to feel less than we are, whether I had a comedy club owner tell me I shouldn't wear skirts on stage because I had thunder thighs.
Ew.
And, and you know, and that's something that isn't, you know, how do I tell somebody that, you know, that when I go on stage now I'm wondering, like, am I wearing the right thing?
Right.
We have all these individual stories, but what we have heard and what people have written articles about, have been very forward about, is that women can't be funny. So when you put that on top of all the things that we experience on a daily basis in classes where we're supposed to feel safe and be a learning environment and express ourselves, it's a very complicated relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to thank you both for doing this. This is I wouldn't say I've been silent about my experiences. I mean, I've told it on the show. I have a platform. I can share this, and so my listeners are not unfamiliar with the sort of struggles that I have, and every comic does. But these are unique. I asked Renee Hicks one time, because people will come up to a comic after a show, a female, and say, you know, I don't usually like female comics, but mm-hmm. you were funny. Mm-hmm. And my joke about that is I don't usually like idiots, and that will always be true.
Right.
And I asked Renee Hicks if she felt that she had any sort of struggle as a black woman, as somebody who's black, mm-hmm. or as a woman. And she said that she has had people tell her they don't usually like black comedians. Have you ever had that experience where someone says, I don't usually like blacks? I mean, that's
only
bold.
Only the club owner.
Really?
No. As he was,
But clubs will tell me that. Clubs will say women don't do well here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that particularly women are more, in my opinion, more likely to have things told, disparaging things told directly to their face.
Because they're comfortable doing that.
Yeah, that's what I think. I don't, you know, but I've never had anybody tell me, you know, I don't usually like. Yeah, I've never had that.
And Elliot, you spent some time with me at Stage 773 watching some of the sketch groups. I mean, there's not a moment where you go, oh, that's funny in a woman way. I mean, because those are some talented performers.
Yeah, I don't make a distinction. I mean, I'm a tremendous fan of anyone who's funny, and I've seen so many really talented, hilarious female comedians on those stages and in a lot of different places. I wanted to ask the ladies, though, if I could. I mean, as someone, I know a lot of this behind-the-scenes stuff, and when I hear about these sorts of things happening, quite frankly, I'm sorry, I'm not surprised. You know, sexism is everywhere,
absolutely.
I'm afraid.
Yeah, it permeates all industries. So,
right.
Yep.
But let's say, looking at from like, I'm a guy who's a consumer who likes to go to a show. What would you encourage the male consumer?
Ooh.
What should they do to kind of like help stem, you know, deal with this thing that you kind of deal with behind the scenes? Is there something that the male consumer can do for you as a female performer?
I think that's a great question. And I think one of the ways that male consumers can help is if there is a show or, you know, they're seeing a performance that they feel has some sexist remarks or has something like that, walk out, you know, stand up and show them that, like, I'm not going to put up with that. Like, that's not something that, like, this isn't okay. If they're doing a rape scene or they're doing, you know, some joke that just doesn't feel right or sit with you, and you, because I've heard that time and again that, you know, even from my friends who we kind of call like the norms, you know, the people that don't do comedy, and they come and see a show and they feel offended by it, but they don't say anything. They mm-hmm. just kind of sit uncomfortably in that chair. And so I would challenge a male consumer, instead of sitting uncomfortably in that chair, to just walk out.
Yeah.
Show them, like, show us that, like, ooh, that wasn't okay. Like, what you just said and did,
it's not my
not for me.
Okay.
Like, I'm going to walk out of here.
I did that at Sketchfest. I left. Mm-hmm. I had gone, there were 8 days of performances. I had mm-hmm. seen almost 20 shows and three shows. And this is a different thing altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have walked out on one. When you said that, I was like, I should have just gotten up. I told my friend tonight that I wanted to get up and leave because I didn't feel safe. life. And that mm-hmm. sounds weird to say to people, but something happened on stage that wasn't necessary. There was a woman playing a man, and one of the actors put his head in her bosom. She was playing a general, and he put it, and like that was the cheap joke. And he was like rubbing his head, mm-hmm, like basically mm-hmm. motorboating somebody who was actually supposed to be a man. And everyone was laughing. She's a curvy woman. She's, you know, very talented. And all of a sudden, the joke became he has her head between her boobs.
Yeah.
And oh my God, we had to take a break. We're going to continue our conversation. But I walked out on a show because it was the third time in 5 days where I'd heard the word retarded, and I was like, you know what? This is not for me anymore. Yeah. And I agree with you. And that includes my shows. I've had people walk out, and listeners, you can walk out. Mm-hmm. If this doesn't make you comfortable, mm-hmm. you have the ability to go, I'm not happy right now. I'll come back when it feels safe again.
It's nice to hear you guys say that, because it's hard sometimes for people to walk out. The only thing I've ever walked out of is Dude, Where's My Car? And that's because the girl I liked walked out first and whatnot. But oh, well.
Oh, man. We are hanging out pretty late with Patty Vasquez, and you can call us and join the conversation if you have any thoughts. 312-981-7200. We have in studio with us Victoria Elena Nones and Caroline Sabatier. It was too long since I heard it. Sabatier. Sabah. Hold on a second. Let me spell this out phonetically again. Okay, I'll figure it out during the break. Elliot Serrano and Dwayne Kennedy also join us. More after this on 720 WG. WGN-TV News reports live from the Iowa caucus. So does WGN Radio, by the way. Ro Khan, Steve Cochran going to be there. Watch for special coverage and analysis all day Monday on WGN-TV. We don't have much time before the next news break, so we are going to continue our conversation about women in comedy. We have Victoria and Caroline in the studio with us, and we'll explain kind of what has unfolded over the last few weeks. I was telling some of my stories off the air that I don't, but when Beth Stelling came out with her story, I started sharing that. And, you know, there are the extremes. There are the relationships that we have. People will tell you, don't date somebody in comedy, and, you know, they can go, you know, don't dip your... whatever. Don't dip stuff. But I mean, you have shared experiences, you have common interests, and you are drawn to people, and sometimes it's too late and you blame yourself. But we are also talking about places that are supposed to be safe, just taking you pay for a class, you are mentored by somebody. And Caroline, before we go to the news, tell us a little bit about what it's like when you take a class, and every situation is a little bit different than you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think maybe Caroline can speak to
this. I'm sorry,
as well,
Victoria.
But, oh, yeah, no, you're fine. You're fine. But Caroline can also speak to this. I think, you know, it's difficult because, again, what we want to do is laugh. Like, we are in comedy because we want to have fun. We want to make people laugh. We want to have a good time. And then also we want to be at the epitome of what comedy is, which is social and political satire, right? So we want to be saying something that's important. And it's hard to do that when you're going into a classroom where you don't feel safe, where you have these people who are sort of abusing their power or being what we would call predatory, you know, and sort of looking at these young women that are coming in, and maybe every time they have a new class, it's like, ooh, there's a new student I can sort of prey on in a way. And it's difficult as a woman. And we've heard a lot of these stories anonymously, and also with you know, people coming forward with details talking about how these teachers abuse that power, and how it's uncomfortable. You know, you go to a class and you want to have fun and you're trying to learn and you're paying this money, and then all of a sudden you leave class and you get this sexy text from your teacher that's like, hey, you know, great class. Like, let's go have a drink. Right.
It's
very difficult because you're sort of like, ooh, this is awkward. And what do you do in this situation? You know, you have a few choices, and maybe you're not interested in this person, but then maybe you're thinking, well, this person is someone that has power. This person is someone that is
gives me stage time,
and also part of the community. And if I say no, then what are they going to do? If I say yes, then what are they going to do? Then there's also that sort of draw, I think, for some young women, and especially new women to the community, that's this idea of like, ooh, kind of like the sexy secret relationship, you know, and that's a big thing that these predators will do. They will say, well, I'm not supposed to have relationships with my students, so don't tell anyone that this is going on.
Right.
And we see this time and time again where these teachers will, you know, they'll tell that to multiple students. So they might be sleeping with 3, 4, 5 students, and they've told all these women, don't tell anyone that we're having a relationship because I'll get in trouble. But what they're really doing is, you know, kind of lying to all of these women. Yeah. And hurting all of them. And I've seen this happen. And then these women find out much, much later, maybe like a year, 2 years later, and they'll be in conversation.
Great conversations, yeah.
And they're like, oh, you had a thing with it? I had a thing. What time was that? When was that? Are you serious? Like, we were sleeping with him at the same time. And that's a really awful thing to discover. You know, it just doesn't feel good. So...
yeah, well, we're going to continue this conversation. And by the way, this is something we know happens in the workplace, but this is a, you know, this is a conversation that I wanted to invite Caroline and Victoria to share with us, because it is in the news this week, and it's also something I'm familiar with, and many of you have heard me have this kind of dialogue before, and I want to expand that and provide a place where you guys can again have a conversation, because a lot of it happens in print and in social media. But right now, it's time for our news. Sorry, Craig. I'm talking to my guests off the air. You know, Elliot gets to hang out for the off the air conversation. He's been waiting all night.
No, I'm psyched. We got to the
That's a really good part.
That's the best part of the song.
The good stuff. You're listening pretty late, and I'm hanging out with some new friends and some old friends. I have Dwayne Kennedy, comedian Dwayne Kennedy, whose CD comes out on February 2nd. Now that he has a sound engineer all ready to go with that. and I've been filling him in on the bits that I would like him to also record later.
Done.
Excellent. Elliot Serrano, who's our sidekick tonight. Well, hopefully we'll find out what we meant to get to and why you were so late tonight.
All right.
But the conversation we're having, and there's an event coming up on Sunday with my guests that they have organized. Victoria and Caroline are part of Women in Comedy. And Dwayne was asking earlier, like, how did this all kind of come to the surface and become part of the news cycle, really, this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was right. I mean, it was a culmination of different things. I think I do think that in terms of getting media attention, I think as soon as Sharna sort of came into the picture, because she is ahead of one of the theaters, that was a big, like that was a siren for people. They're like, right. "Ooh, I'm going to jump on that." So,
right, she's a target, and yes. She's sort of a lightning rod.
Yes,
right.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I think that she actually served a purpose in some beneficial ways, because I think that even though she said things that people found offensive, that in the end, you know, she really helped highlight what's going on and brought some attention to what's happening. So it's been interesting. There's just a lot of different things going on. But I think the posts plus Sharna and then the media sort of bringing it to the forefront and uplifting our voices, I think that that's what's made things boil over and have people, you know, come out and come forward.
Do you have an estimate about how many people have posted things anonymously and publicly?
Publicly, I'm not sure. It's, you know, I mean, I look at my own personal news feed and you see a lot of stories, but I think for the form, I was just looking at it today and we're at about 380 submissions, give or take a little bit. I mean, obviously we have some troll submissions.
And this is just Chicago, or is this?
No, this is all over, right? So most of the submissions have been from Chicago, just because I posted it to my personal Facebook. So most people are sharing it, you know, sort of within the city, but we've seen from all over. We're not just in the United States, but also like in Australia. We're getting Shanghai, just random people submitting, which is interesting, right? And it's interesting to see that this is happening on a national level, on a global level. That, you know, and again, it's not surprising, right? Like this happens in all kinds of industries, but definitely for us, you know, it's happening all over the place,
and we don't talk about it publicly.
No.
And Caroline, what would you like to tell people about the experience as a female performer? Because that's what they call you—a female improviser or a female sketch comic.
Right.
Yeah. How does that feel when you hear that rather than just a performer?
I think it kind of adds a layer of sort of judgment that doesn't necessarily need to be there. And that was one of the reasons. I think that like a lot of the submissions that we've been getting since we've gotten so many anonymous submissions, and after Sharna's post came out, a lot of the suggestions were kind of vague. That was kind of what led me to write a more specific article where it wasn't anonymous, and it kind of did get into more detail about my own personal experience with assault in the community, which was kind of what led us to start planning this event for Sunday, so that we could have a broader conversation about it and kind of honor people who have kind of been forced out of the entertainment industry because they felt like they didn't have another choice. Like Victoria mentioned a few minutes ago, when you end up in a situation with a teacher or a director or a coach and you're a young woman in comedy, you do kind of face a lose-lose situation, because if you go forward with what they're sort of pushing on to you, you're obviously putting yourself in a dangerous situation. But if you don't, your career might suffer. And I mean, now that, I mean, I think Victoria and I have both taken some time out of the comedy scene to kind of get some perspective. But when you're in the midst of it, it's very hard to kind of get that layer of perspective that this isn't the be-all, end-all of everything and that you do have choices. But it's just so hard to see at the time.
It is, because IO and Second City are really the flagships of sketch comedy and improv in the city of Chicago. So when you find that that's not a safe place for you anymore and you want to be able to express yourself, and all of a sudden this is not comfortable anymore. Because there were stories, I'm not sure who it was, that someone bit her breast and was trying to laugh it off.
It was Angie McMahon. Yeah, yeah, she's the head of Under the Gun Theater. But yeah, I mean, it happens. Those kinds of things happen all the time.
Right.
What the heck?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you need to get on the blog. You need to read those stories.
Or you're maybe I don't.
Yeah, it's scary.
What was that?
It's just, I mean, there's a lot. I think it goes back to the fact that this sort of community was founded with a lot of like dudes that were just having fun, and there was sort of this like anti-establishment thing going on. But I think there was also, it was a male-dominated industry, like many things, and there was a lot of entrenched misogyny that sort of just happened from the get-go. It was sort of like the women were there to have fun and to be loose and to be there for the men
and to be the witnesses to dick jokes.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, that's
still going on.
Yeah. Every open mic in every city sorry. Oh, we're not supposed to say bad words.
No.
I've said it first.
You were not supposed to say bad words.
Yeah, but Dick is the name of like a man's name, so we're okay. Like, we're rocking it.
You guys were all talking about Richard jokes.
Yes. Right. We're talking about Dick Nixon. Everyone tells Dick Nixon jokes. Yeah, like, come on.
Exactly.
Richardson.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, that always seemed to be the case. Like, we were there to, you know, the men would always have the more prominent roles, and we were supposed to receive. Yeah. And then there are women who are expressive and are you know, want to go in that direction. But then what came first? Is it because the environment lends itself to that, or is that really what a performer wants to express?
Right.
Yeah, I think also when women do express boundaries in this community, it's much easier for men to be like, "I was just kidding.
Right.
You misconstrued what I was trying to say." So it's taken much less seriously than it might be in a more regulated industry.
And it goes back to, no one wants to feel like they're the bad guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What we want, what I want in general, and this will be fun. No, because there's
tell
a
us
dude,
what you want.
No, there's a dude just standing behind you drinking a Slurpee, and that's just weird.
We like Slurpees. Yeah, I love Slurpees.
Right.
Is we want people to, for me, is to say, I hadn't thought of it that way,
mm-hmm.
and sort of think about the way they behave.
Right.
Right. Whether or not you can go back and fix anything, that's, you know, it's not what you've done, it's what you're going to do.
Yeah, it's
right.
How you react to it. And I think a great example of this, and I mentioned this in the article, but my teacher at the Second City, his name is Scott Dickers, and he was a co-founder of The Onion, and he was the one that made the inappropriate rape joke at the time that I sort of mentioned. There's many, many experiences that we've all had. This is just one of many, but this is one that stands out to me. And part of the reason it stands out to me is because of how he handled it, right? We're talking about, like, these things are going to happen, but it's all in how you handle it. And he handled it with grace. He, you know, stood up for me. He apologized.
Right.
He came forward, and that's so helpful. Like, it's great. Like, walk out, you know, stand up, say something, be there for women. Don't say, "Oh, I was just joking." Like, take responsibility for your behavior.
I didn't mean anything by it, or
sure,
you're being too thin skinned.
Like, yeah, or, "Oh, you're crazy. Why don't you stop gaslighting?"
Yes, I mean, now, Caroline, how would you give advice to another comedian moving to Chicago and getting involved in the scene?
I would advise them to remember that at the end of the day, they're the prize. Like, not to get caught up in the scene or what people think of you. I think that people tend to get really caught up with how others see them here,
right,
and what their image is and what kind of comic they are and what kind of improv.
Because finding your voice, whether you're a stand-up comic or a sketch comic, is a process.
Right. It's
a
process.
And when you are bumping into these, you know, sort of bumps along the way, it makes it harder to keep focused on that.
Right.
Keep showing up, I think, is also.
Yeah, I think keep showing up. Remember who you are at the end of the day. Don't let that kind of slip away because other people are pressuring you into doing things. I mean, I love Chicago. I think the community has great things about it. As you know, it's nothing's perfect. The Chicago comedy community isn't perfect either, but I think that once people start having the courage to stand up for themselves, I think that's when things are really going to change.
Yeah, I think so too. And I, the reason I wanted to ask Elliot about this, a situation that happened at a Comic-Con, is it's one thing when something happens to you directly, that's the situation in which you should respond to. When you are extrapolating your emotions and your tension to somebody else's experience, that's when things can get a little bit heated, because mm-hmm. you're speaking for somebody else. I mean, like, as women, we want to speak for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Don't jump in on somebody else's, encourage that person mm-hmm. and say, hey, was that safe for you? Did you feel uncomfortable? Don't speak for us, because that diminishes us as well. And that was a situation you had, Elliot, that made me very angry, that people who weren't even at the event, because I was, and I've been the victim of, being sexualized, of misogyny, of, you know, harassment. And I wasn't like jumping, and not because we're friends. Like I thought it was a corny joke. That would be my only thing to you. but you were attacked on social media.
For those who aren't aware, I made a joke with Alex Kingston,
who plays River Song
on Doctor Who, but also played Dr. Elizabeth Corday on ER. So in the process of our interview on stage, I thought it would be funny when I said
you thought yeah, that's where it started. It went there, wrong.
Stupid
get
boy.
That out of there.
Right. Well, and this is the ironic part, is that I even ran this by my female coworkers in the office.
And me. He ran it by me, and I was like,
Questionable.
I said I didn't think most people were going to get it.
Right. I know. I said that because her television characters had things for doctors, I made a fictional doctorate based in the television world. So it was issued by Minnesota State University, the fictional university from the TV show Coach.
Right.
So many layers on this.
So
bit.
There were
that's,
a lot of layers.
That is. That's, I mean, deep. Right. Yeah, that's some detailed. Deep subtext.
So I said, I pulled out my fictional doctorate, and I said, well, and then I said to Alex Kingston, I'm not asking you out because I know you're married, but I'd be curious. I would like to know if Dr. Elizabeth Corday would like to have a cup of coffee sometime. And there were a couple laughs in the audience, but obviously I didn't set the joke up very well. there was like a nervous silence going on.
And you're like, no, I'm sinking.
No, it was.
Like,
and I was like,
panic.
I got to pull.
You can't go back.
Let's pull
and
the
she kept looking at the diploma. Like, he had it like framed with the glass and everything.
Yeah. You went like all out. And she's like, what?
Props,
is
everything.
That was a look on her face, because she looked at me and her exact words were, I don't know what to do with this. And it was a funny thing, because I was like, oh my God, I could see on her face. She's reading this and she's going, oh my God, how much time did this
guy put into this?
Wow,
this is a little much.
Yeah, a little much. This guy really committed to this joke, which was not going over. And afterwards, she even said she thought it was, she thought, oh, it was cute and it was funny. And she wasn't. But apparently, while I was on stage, someone started tweeting that I was hitting on the guest. And that I was sexually harassing her.
And not only that, but it became Elliot tends to make women uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what?
Yikes.
Don't speak for me. Because Elliot and I are besties.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But that was, to me, that was like a full-on attack.
I mean, I don't want to sound sexist or anything, but to me, that seemed pretty benign. I don't know how it feels.
See, and this is where it's weird, right? So everyone's
but
like...
No.
But if I may, here's the thing, though, and this is the honest to goodness truth. Afterwards, and some of the folks who were saying to me on Twitter, this is what was wrong. Mm-hmm. This is how we interpreted it. Mm-hmm. And I even said on Twitter, I'm really sorry. The joke didn't go over. I'm sorry it was perceived that way.
It was a coach joke.
Joke. And you know what? And if
do either one of you know the TV show joke? Coach? See?
Yeah.
Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah, that was a funny show, man.
You went too deep, homie.
Jerry Van Dyke. Pam Stone. She played the women's basketball coach.
It was great. Nope. But I apologize profusely. And here's the thing I learned. You cannot apologize enough on social media.
No.
Social media is tough.
We've had a rough week with that.
Why? So. Who are you apologizing to?
We've had a lot of backlash actually this week, so we totally feel you. It's tough when the people get rolling, because when you're behind a keyboard, it's so easy to say whatever you want to say. But when you're in real life, it's like, would you really say that to somebody? Would you actually say that to my face or to your face? Like some of the things I'm sure you experienced as well. In a nutshell, we've experienced a lot of backlash this week because we planned the blackout on Monday night, and there was a diversity showcase happening at I.O. And so then, yes. Caroline called for the blackout on a Monday.
I don't mean to laugh so hard.
I suggested this blackout for Monday to honor survivors of assault in the community.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh then.
Who have had to leave
on diversity night. Okay.
Yes. So we experienced a lot of backlash about that because there was some confusion with the media. First of all, the media was saying that we were doing a boycott, which is not what we were doing. We were doing a blackout, which to me, you know, in terms of, you know, description, it's more like a candlelight vigil. Like we're doing sort of like, gesture. Let's all come together and honor the people who have left the community because they were assaulted or had something, right?
And the reason I laugh is because when you do a diversity showcase, you're trying to give an opportunity to people who are disenfranchised.
Yes. And so that's, yep. That's
so it's sort of like these competing, you know, people who are surviving, people who are trying to survive. It's a lot of different things, yeah.
Right. So we experienced a lot of that this week with social media and people sort of jumping on the bandwagon.
Everyone take a step back, take a breath.
Yes. And there's a lot of emotions involved right now. So it's understandable, I think, that people are upset. People are angry. People are sad. People are experiencing so many different things. And I've seen a lot of my friends, and myself included, I'm running on fumes right now. I've had like 2 hours of sleep a night. It's just been crazy. But
I kept calling her. I knew she was busy. I was like, no, give me a call. Hey. Seriously, Victoria. I'm serious. But
I think it can get out of hand with social media. I'm sorry that you experienced that. And I know it's tough and it's hard because you know,
it was a bad joke. And I probably should have
you should be embarrassed.
Especially when you apologize for it.
I still am.
So before
bring your shame here.
This is where it comes out. Let's take a break and we'll tell people what's happening on Sunday and how you can come out and join us because I'll be there as well. More after this on 720 WGN. We didn't have time to talk about it. It did not make the show. It had to go. Maybe next time. I don't know. This is the end of the show. We gotta go. The end of the show. Do-si-do. I know we didn't get to it. All right, Craig. Are you? Wait a minute. Is that? Hold on, what is that? What is that?
I believe that is called the bunny hop, and I was also skiing during it.
You were the bunny skiing tonight.
Yes. Why? Thank you.
Well, we've been in our chairs all week dancing. We've decided to tone it down a little bit just because we're. By the way, I'm recovering from an extensively brutal doghouse CrossFit experience.
Oh no! I did not envy you.
Oh, CrossFit.
We had to do burpees into pull-ups.
Ew. No, thank you.
Yes.
I know.
Point out the guy who's holding a gun to your head, making you do this. I will stop him.
I know. Dom, it was mean. He actually said the goal today for the workout was death.
Oh God.
And
no.
I was like, I was just going for don't puke.
So you failed then today. Good job. Did not die.
I know. Yeah, I did not puke either. So I was very excited. We are hanging out with our friends, Elliot, Caroline, Victoria, and Dwayne. And Caroline and Victoria have an event coming up this Sunday as well as later in February. Tell us a little bit about Sunday.
Well, there's a lot to say about Sunday. We're going to have, first of all, we are having a quote-unquote blackout, and the blackout is to sort of honor women and men who have left the community because of assault, harassment, or sexism, and we're asking people to just not go to the theaters, not go to a show, not go to class to sort of honor those people and then to tag them.
And you know, when you say shows, you mean improv and sketch?
Anything comedy related. So we're just, again, trying to sort of, you know.
Dwayne, are you performing on Sunday?
Yeah, I was. Thanks a lot.
Sorry. I mean, we just, you know, there's a lot we have to do. So we have that going on. And then we're having a community discussion because we think it's important as, you know, to move forward that we have to come together. We've been, you know, we've had all these conversations on social media. But I think it's time for us to come together in person to sit down, to have some discussions. And there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of confusion. I think it's a good time to educate women and men on some of the differences between what is sexism, what is harassment, what constitutes assault, and what are my rights, and how do I go about defending myself if those things happen.
And I think this is important for men as well, not only to listen, but I think that there are men who are victims in certain situations, whether it's because of their body type or their sexual preference or their ethnicity, whatever it is. This is a place to tell, you know, the panel is all women from different parts of the business, whether it's the YWCA for the survivors of assault and a lot of comics as well. So thank you for inviting me to be a part of the panel.
Yeah, we're excited to have you, and I think it'll be good.
I'm the old broad on the panel, just so you know.
We're trying to have, you know, a pretty diverse panel. I think we've got some good women coming in. We have a lot of different perspectives, and we're trying to sort of bridge the gap between that unique space that we fill as comedians and then bringing in some experts about what happens with these cultural shifts, because this really is a cultural thing. Again, we know that the sexism, the harassment, all those things permeate different industries, but how do we address those things for our industry? Like, how do we look at it, you know, with comedy?
But girls, really, when are you just going to, you know, get married, get pregnant, and stop doing this funny little comedy thing?
Like, you know, that's all you want out of life.
Yeah. You're not going to get a husband like that.
No, you are not. Don't speak your mind. Nobody wants to hear it.
So that's Sunday at the Laugh Factory at Broadway and Halsted.
Yes.
And we're Broadway and Belmont, right?
Broadway and Belmont. Yes, 3175 North Broadway. Look up the Laugh Factory, and it's from 2 to 4 p.m. Anyone is welcome to come.